The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
What is that? Someone made a tape of something dying or something.
Turn that crap off! What's going on?
I want this music out of my head.
Hey, turn that off! Turn that off right now!
PFW in Progress with Red Kirsch.
Well, Dak, here's the deal. I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence, and nobody can hang with my stuff. I'm just a big, hairy American winning machine. If you ain't first, you're last.
Paul Perillo.
Shut up in here. I'm trying to sleep. One of you turds is about to get smacked.
Hey, stop yelling at me, okay?
And Andy. And Andy?
Hey, Ryder! Jarvis!
Please be 18.
Andy Hart.
We were shellbacks together, Andy! You got payback coming!
Eric Scalavino.
Remember that time we got kicked out of biology for playing with Matchbox cars?
Yeah!
Who's retarded now?
For now, anyway.
My husband Gregory and I wish only for that which every other couple wishes for. To tame Komodo dragons in Sri Lanka.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Hakuna Matata, bitches.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. And according to tweets that I received, this is a highly anticipated show.
Twitter blowing up.
Everybody wants to get our opinion and give theirs of the Super Bowl that we just watched Sunday night, and a disappointing Super Bowl if you're anyone but a Seattle Seahawks fan, I think. It reminded me back in the days when the AFC would get to the Super Bowl and the NFC would wax them.
Well, in a year of crappy football, it ended on a crappy note.
Well, okay. But I think that, you know, Seattle certainly didn't play crappy football. I think they were good.
Oh, we don't know. They didn't have an opponent.
Oh, okay. Well, they had one the week before, and it was a good game 2 weeks before that with 49ers. But I just think, it's hard to say how the Patriots would have done. They probably would have.
It is. I don't think it's hard to say. I think they would have got their asses kicked.
Not like that.
Maybe not the same score. They would have got their asses kicked.
They probably
didn't have any weapons that could get tackled every time they touched the ball within 4 yards of the line of scrimmage.
But, you know, in terms of Seattle scoring, I think Seattle's points were on mistakes a lot, of, you know, whether they forced or not, that, you know, the Denver made. And, you know, Seattle's offense didn't really go crazy. Marshawn Lynch had like 39 yards rushing.
They probably would not have scored as many points,
right?
But it would have been a 2004 Patriots ass kicking.
Yeah.
Of the game was never in question. They were the best team on the field.
I agree with
the
that.
The swarming secondary to me was what it was all about. Yeah. Every time they ran their stupid little crossing patterns, and Demaryius Thomas, the poo, what do you call him? Pussy, would catch the ball running away from the defense, and they would still, two guys would hit him.
Right.
They didn't show up.
He'd give up the first down.
What a vagina. Yeah. What an abs. And he's big. Like, I could see Wes Welker, you know, Marvin Harrison, these guys that are shying away from contact. Demaryius Thomas, what a pussy.
Well, how much
and
of
it... And Eric Decker, I mean, I guess, at least I noticed Thomas. I'm not even sure Decker was on the field.
How much of it was, though, you know, Seattle just being so much better than Denver, or Denver, in part, kind of just not living up to the moment?
Well, they laid an egg. Yeah, there's no doubt. They were overwhelmed by the moment, the opponent, the everything. They were overwhelmed.
And why is that?
I don't know.
You know? Why is that? I mean, Manning's been there before, and so you would think that he'd be talking
Been there before.
Yeah, he'd be talking to his players and teammates about, hey, look, you know, it's a big game, but let's not go nuts about it. Let's be relaxed.
It happens.
Let's just play our game.
It's 2 weeks.
John Fox has been there before.
Yeah.
But it's you don't know the – I know, and a lot of people are talking about Fox had him in pads, and maybe that was a problem. They should have been in pads practicing. I just think it's one of those things you never know – with everything that goes into it, the media, the extra week, the travel, the Super Bowl, you don't know how you're going to be when you step on that field, and you weren't ready.
You know, Wes Welker kind of threw his team under the bus saying, you know, we really didn't do a good enough job preparing for the noise.
You know, I did see that.
That was kind of weird, you know?
Yeah, I also thought it was interesting that he called it embarrassing, and then Manning got all pissy when somebody called it embarrassing.
Yeah.
Well, Wes said it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
Don't get pissy at me. Wes said it was embarrassing.
Right. Well, poor Wes. I mean, because, you know, this is his third now, and each one of them, you know, twice you were favored and you lost, And this one, whether or not you were favored, you just didn't show up. So he's had really, really bad experiences in three Super Bowls now, you know, for him. So I feel bad for him.
Luckily, he doesn't remember any of them.
And, you know, of all and of all the Broncos, I think he did pretty good. You know, he had one.
I think he showed up and at least tried.
Yeah.
Which is more than I can say for most of that team. I mean, that kick return where they had like three guys run into each. It was the Three Stooges. It was
the whole Baldwin, idea. The Baldwin touchdown. The whole idea of kicking it the way they did was to, you know, negate.
Cue the circus music, John Fox.
Yeah, that was absolutely poorly conceived, poorly executed. Just everything that could go wrong did. Right from the first snap of the game.
Yeah, I said a bad word. I exclaimed a bad word in front of my son, and the game ended. I said, this game's over. Like, it just felt like that was what it was going to be.
Which word did you say?
Paul, did you nod when they had that?
What does it rhyme with?
Not on the safety.
I actually don't remember.
No.
I just remember getting hit by my wife.
Oh.
Or yelled at by my wife.
When they got the second stop, and then, you know, so it's 5-0, then they stopped him again.
Yeah.
And I remember around that time, might have been 8-0. But I said it was over. I thought the game was over at like 5-0, 8-0, right in that area. And then I think Knowshon Moreno fumbled, and Denver recovered it. And I said, wow, that would have been game, set, match had they recovered it. And the next play, Manning overthrew Julius Thomas for the Cam Chancellor pick.
Right.
And the game was over.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It was only like 5-0 or 8-0, but the game was over.
It was an early nod game because, like what Andy said, even though the score was 8-0, you know, and, you know, that's a touchdown. But you just knew that Denver is not going to be able to do anything against this team.
And I just talked to somebody in our organization who's a big Seahawks fan, and he was talking about, I said, I thought it was over at 2-0, 5-0. It was over. It was 2004 Patriots. Doesn't matter what the score says. And he was like, well, you know, it's Manning, and you're thinking, we've had so many chances, but we're kicking field goals, and I think it was 15-0, right? And you're thinking, wow, we're really, you know, he's two scores, and he's back in this
game. Yeah, but what was going to change?
But nothing, there was never a chance. It wasn't happening.
Right.
You can talk yourself into it if you're a scaredy cat, if you're whatever, but it wasn't happening that day. On another day, maybe you look at it and say, he's down 15, that might be okay. On this day, it didn't matter that you were down 2, that you were down 5, that you were down 8. It was over.
Absolutely. If they had put a couple of long drives together and maybe, you know, fumbled a snap inside the 20 and cost himself points, or, you know, a deflection happens and you get a pick that costs you points and you're down 15-0, you're like, well, man, you can put together two drives and not have the mistakes at the end. It was they had one possession that he completed three passes and they didn't get a first down. They had another drive where they actually moved about 40 or 50 yards. They had third and like an inch and got it by an inch like three different times.
Yeah.
Like every yard
was contested.
Was contested
yep.
in that game. They had no answers for it. And then once they fall behind, once it was 15-0, now they can ignore the little fake handoffs to Knowshon. They can make it a light box, and they're not going to run because you can't run the ball to get back in the game now.
Right.
And now that's when the pass rush. Because early in the game, I thought he had plenty of time, and he just was playing terrible. Then the pass rush was just an avalanche. The two tackles got killed. Orlando Franklin got absolutely destroyed by Cliff Averill in that game. Absolutely destroyed.
After destroying us.
Yeah,
2 weeks earlier.
We never
After
got
not
near him.
Giving anyone near.
That's
him.
Why, like, I think it would have been every bit as bad. I think the score may have been as bad because I think that the Patriots have less options to try to put points on the board than Denver did. I think they might have taken the ball right out of someone's hands for us.
The only thing I was thinking is maybe Bill chooses to just do quick kicks, Dartmouth, New Bedford style. Every third down, we're punting. We're not going to give them the chance to make any plays on us. I'll give them the damn ball.
Yeah, So immediately afterwards, I thought it was kind of funny, the reaction, you know, whenever a team wins, you know, okay, now that's what everybody has to be. Everybody wants to copy whoever the latest team that won. So now everyone wants that fast, big defense.
Well, everybody has always wanted fast, big defense.
Right, that's
isn't that kind of cliche?
That's kind of my point. But, you know, Tom Jackson, I think, was said, you know, this is the team to beat for the next 6 to 7 years. Really? You know, I mean, how often have we seen really good teams win a Super Bowl and the next year have that Super Bowl hangover that Jimmy Johnson wrote about? That,
but not even that, not even taking it to that approach, just the fact that, and I've heard everybody say that, you know, this is a dynasty. Well, these contracts are going to start coming due. So everybody says, you know, the Felgers of the world, look at the Seahawks. They weren't satisfied last year. They got close. What'd they do? They went out and gave Cliff Averill $13 million. That's a lot easier to do when you pay your quarterback $650,000.
Right.
When you pay the top corner in football $650,000, whatever.
Right.
When those guys start making $15 million or $11 million for a corner,
they're going to want their money.
Then it's not so easy anymore. You can't just supplement what you're doing. You can't just they blew Percy Harvin. That was a terrible acquisition the way it turned out this year, except it helped win him a Super Bowl at the very end. But otherwise, financially, that was the kind of mistake financially that costs a team for years. But you don't notice it because of the quarterback and all their star players are under reasonable deals.
Right? That was the one that really bothered me yesterday when they were talking about Percy Harvin. I have no problem with the Percy Harvin move, but you can't say it worked. It didn't work. Andy's exactly right. You gave up a first, a third, and a seventh.
It didn't hurt you.
Plus a huge extension,
right.
And he didn't play.
Right. Right.
He did not play for you. He played two games.
Right. It didn't hurt you this year.
Right. But that's the kind of move. If that's your one move because you're tight up against it, and you, well, now you're screwed.
But they're talking about it like, oh, did
who's
you see
they?
What,
who's they?
Felger and Mez.
Idiots.
No, you brought
you
up.
You know how you like to say that fans are stupid?
But I was,
you know who else is stupid? F&M.
Well, that's one of the things.
But
I
I'm coupling
to talk
off of what you said. You talked about Felger saying that you can load up and go out and get Cliff Avril. Well, they loaded up and made a bad move on Harvin that did absolutely nothing. And they're talking about the impact he had in the Super Bowl. First of all, they would have won 43-8 without Percy Harvin.
Right.
Okay. Even though he made two really big plays in the Super Bowl, he did.
Could have been the MVP. Yep.
Two dynamic plays he made. He had a long run and he had the kickoff return.
Right off the bat, the 30-yard run and the kickoff. You know, which kind of put. Denver was on their heels anyway, to Paul's point. And with or without Percy Harvin, they would have won that game. But I think later in the show, it ties to this conversation. I do want to talk about Robert Kraft's sit-down with Felger and Maz at the Super Bowl on Radio Row, because I think Felger did a good job asking the questions that Felger's been asking all year about, accumulating talent.
That's why I don't put him with a lot of other guys. And Andy and I talk about this a lot. He can sit there and he can be bombastic and he can be an idiot. But the stuff that he says and rails against, he's going to say when Jonathan Kraft comes on the show.
Right.
And he said when Robert Kraft came on his show.
Whether or not you agree with him, he did ask those questions and forced the owner of the New England Patriots to address the concerns that Felger's had, which, let's face it, most of talk radio has when it comes to the Patriots. Right or wrong, but... I want to talk about that in this show, what the response of Robert Kraft was and whether or not you agree with Robert Kraft or not. So I think that's going to be a good topic for conversation.
Do you have notes over there?
Yeah, I wrote down a few.
It's some show prep.
Yeah.
Wow. Is that a first?
No. I've done
I think
it, before.
It is.
I've done it before.
I've never seen you take notes.
No, when there's a lot to talk about, I want to make sure that we touch on certain subjects.
Wow.
But the game itself, of course, we're going to let people weigh in.
Sucked. The commercials sucked for the most part.
Commercials were disappointing. I thought the halftime
show
was really good.
Yes.
I liked the Tebow commercials. I thought those
were
really good.
Tebow was funny. Yeah.
I think T-Mobile had some really effective commercials. They weren't entertaining.
The pink background thing with
we'll
buy out your contract.
That whole program that they have right now about buying people out of their current contracts
is
really a good, and it's working for them. People are doing it. So I thought they were a winner in terms of advertising. It was clear and effective advertising, and I thought the Tebow thing was good. Other than that,
nothing.
There wasn't much going
Very
on.
Little resonated with me.
I thought the Bruno Mars was good. I thought that was a good halftime show. Not as good as 36. Nothing ever will
Did
be.
Did you like the anthem?
The anthem was very good. It was good. When she started out, I was like, oh, this is going to take forever. But she sped it up a little bit. So that was good. What else was I going to say?
I don't know. Check your
notes. The weather?
obviously the weather was good. They escaped by a day.
Right. These idiots that are like, oh, it was perfect.
Well, that's the other thing. When I was reading on Twitter, now that they've had this, there's a lot of other cold weather teams like the Patriots that will be lining up.
Whoa.
They might line up, but they won't get it.
You're not reading that off Twitter. You're reading that off Ben Volen. Ben Volen wrote today, bet on the Patriots getting a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's sooner, not –
right.
It's when, not if.
The reason why they got this is because they built a $1.6 billion stadium.
Right.
Now, Minnesota might get one because they're about to build another one and it'll be indoors.
Yeah.
But Chicago, the Patriots, they're not going to get one. The owners aren't going to vote for it. They're
not
going
to
do it.
Ben Volen says.
Unless the Patriots decide to build a new stadium to replace this one, which is 13 years old now. They're not going to get a, and Chicago's not going to get one.
Tell Ben Volen.
You know, that.
Plus, did you hear some of the stuff about just the logistical nightmares that it was on game day
people? But one more thing I want to just
fans,
say.
Fans, you mean?
And, you know, and Ben Volen, whoever is saying this, can point to Goodell not closing the door when asked. Well, yeah, he's not going to ever close the door on anything because he wants other cold weather teams that have a chance to build a stadium to, you know, keep that hope alive. So he's never going to rule anything out. So don't take the commissioner's word. But to Paul's point, there were problems. You know, there was a big bottleneck in Secaucus, New Jersey, where they were, you know, getting people through the security there. And I guess they were in a tunnel, which literally somebody took the temperature. It was like over 100 degrees.
People were passing out, I guess.
And they're bringing coats because, you know, they were planning to watch an outdoor game. So, and they were in there for like 2 hours in some, or not, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it was like a good hour anyway in this type of heat. People were passing out, throwing up, you know, so that was probably something that they could have done better. You know, so, but for overall, I think it was a good week for the NFL.
What was the incident at the podium after the game?
Oh, the 9/11 guy.
Yeah.
After, he ran on somebody's
security.
Podium.
He was a truther.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just ran up on a pole, and I guess Harvey Green literally physically removed the Dolphins PR guy, physically removed him from the podium. Because he's old school, you know. He's got those short sleeve dress shirts on. He doesn't even have to roll it up. He's ready to go.
I want to just read this real quick, Fred. This was someone who went to the game, one of my friends. And he said, travel to and from the game was hell by train. NFL and New Jersey Transit should be shot. On the way, there was a wait in Secaucus that was over an hour, and people were fainting from heat and exhaustion. It was Lord of the Flies-like stuff. Some people were not getting medical help in a timely manner. The ride home was just as dreadful and took an hour and a half to get on the train at the stadium. They should not get another Super Bowl just for that. So, I mean, it was really tough just to get there and back.
Yeah.
Forget about how lucky they were with a 49-degree temperature. You know, and like you said, the next day, I think they got like 8 or 10 inches yesterday. We just got kind of a dusting around here.
Yeah,
but they got
many.
That's what'd you get?
6+.
Yeah, we got about 4.
I'm going to get that. Tonight tomorrow. Into tomorrow.
I'm really surprised that they screwed that up because I figured with the time they had to plan and with the amount of buses and shuttles that are available, don't put everybody on the train. Mix it up. Have, you know,
this
unlimited amount of shuttles and buses in addition to the train.
This was the first time they did that transit plan, right? Where you couldn't drive.
Right, but that transit plan was supposed to be available for all different types of public transportation, not just the
train. I thought there were shuttles, too.
That's what I thought.
Oh, there weren't?
I don't know. It just
I thought there were bus shuttles.
I think there were, too.
It just seems like they said 40,000 people were trying to get on the train.
I think a lot of people wanted to use the train.
I thought there were like 15 locations where you could go to get the shuttle as well.
Mm. Okay, well, I guess
that's actually
true. I didn't hear any reports, but obviously those people didn't complain, so that must have worked.
Well, that was the one horrific, and it happened relatively early, and I guess it kind of it let go after that. But that was the horrific incident.
Right.
I don't think there's going to be a Super Bowl here ever. Like you said, maybe if they build a different stadium in downtown Boston in 20 years. And
I don't think as long as it's the stadium here in Foxborough.
The travel plan is actually one reason where you could now. If you're not going to allow anybody to drive to a game, then the fact that it's on Route 1 is irrelevant. If you're only going to have shuttle buses coming down Route 1 that you control and you time, that's actually a check in favor of you don't necessarily have to have the best transit in and out of the stadium because you've now eliminated all these people from driving.
Yep.
But it's not going to happen. Like Ben Volen. He makes me laugh in the story because he tweets out that, you know, on the day before and of the game, you know, New England temperatures were 42 and 50, you know, warmer than Houston and this.
Right.
Yeah, what are the average temperatures?
Plus, a-hole, as somebody who's been trying to run a marathon and try to train for a marathon, that was the nicest day we've had in a month. Mm. I loved my Saturday run. Every other day, it's been like 15 freaking degrees, windy and cold. Mm. So don't tell me you can count on good weather on that weekend, Dingleberry.
They got lucky. They got lucky, you know, so.
Which we all knew they would.
Yeah. So, again, that was definitely payback for building the stadium.
Right. And it's New York.
Plus,
that's the other thing.
You
it's New York.
You can't dismiss that, too.
It's New York. It's special. It's different. It's unique. It's the hub, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
We're not that. Even if you consider us in Boston, we're not that.
A couple of months ago, Fred.
Maybe 2076. Because it'll be some type of anniversary of 1776. They'll have it in Boston.
Now, what Super Bowl is that?
I don't know, but maybe 2076.
Fred, a couple of months ago, you had that big thing for your Around the NFL on our TV show about New York. And right. how, you know, this is a major, just, I mean, the media capital of the world, they're used to dealing with stuff like this. They'll be able to, that's part of why it wasn't just a total
disaster.
Super
Bowl 111.
Right.
But, I'll be at that one.
You know, you can't, can you imagine with the travel, those travel people that are talking about if they had to deal with a foot of snow that fell the next day?
Are you kidding me?
It took them 3 hours to get to the stadium. You know, right. now let's throw weather into the equation.
Right.
It was 49 degrees and it took them 3 hours to get there.
Right.
Auxiliary press looked nice. Did you see that?
I heard it was too hot.
Yeah.
Well, they had Howard Balzer said he was removing layers.
Right.
But they were under heat lamps in the end zone under the overhang, like in the top of the first row. It sounds like it would have been the best auxiliary press ever.
Yeah.
So I couldn't have bitched.
It was
Paul
funny.
Because he's Paul.
Florio.
I couldn't have bitched, but I wouldn't have been blogging. I told
Florio
you.
Florio must
blog.
Have been in the main press box, but he tweeted out a picture of.
Well, he should be. He's had the NFL by the cojones and caressing him for two years.
He tweeted out a picture of the. Auxiliary press box from his vantage point, and the rest of the stadium was dark, but this was like bright orange. He's like, it's the gates of hell.
Looked like the heat lamps, like what your French fries are sitting under,
right,
and you're waiting
right.
for. That's what all the media
it was. Pretty funny.
I wonder if any of them get like suntans from sitting under.
But you know, overall,
yeah, Paulie Walnuts, one of those little
disappointing, Super Bowl. Now,
most disappointing
question,
ever for me.
Question. Okay. We all think we all agree that if the Patriots were in that game, they would have lost. Okay, realistically,
yes.
However, if I mean, there has to be a way to beat the Seahawks. Okay, they're not going to be, you know, impenetrable.
Oh, I think San Francisco should have beaten them.
They could have beaten them, and
but would San Francisco have beaten them on this day?
If the
that's my question. My criticism of Bill Belichick.
There's no way.
My criticism of Bill Belichick's Patriots in 07 for treating it like a business trip
right.
is the exact opposite of what the Seahawks did.
Yes.
They came out frothing at the mouth like this was their coronation. Why not us? Why not today? We're kicking ass. We're taking names.
I agree.
So I don't know what the San Francisco 49ers, who maybe should have beat them 2 weeks earlier, would have done on this day if they didn't match that intensity.
So and it's hard to assume that anybody would have played as bad. Because as well as Seattle played, you can't dismiss the fact that Denver played so badly.
Right.
You can't just
and
like
so pussy-ly.
You can't just say it, that was because of Seattle that they played so badly.
Yeah. So my question is, you know, obviously Seattle's defense
you'd
have
to
say
play like a pussy, you're a pusillanimous.
Basically, that's what it means. Yeah.
You'd have to say right now Seattle's defense is the best in the league.
Doesn't even sound
you know,
right.
But my question is, and I was just it's just a thought.
Were they the number one team in the Wilson Hart Power Index all year? Yes, they were.
What a team like the Patriots.
Kansas City number two?
With
yes,
a healthy Gronk.
Were the Broncos well down?
And a
proving themselves
Hernandez.
Deserving of it?
Are you
yes,
let
they
me
were.
Talk at all?
They lost the game, so they proved themselves unworthy of being good.
They got their asses kicked.
As opposed
they
to,
proved
as
themselves.
Opposed to Kansas City losing like six of their last seven.
Well beneath San Francisco and Carolina and some
and
of the
Kansas
teams
City
that were ahead of them
that
everybody criticized.
Would a Patriots team with a healthy Gronk, a healthy Hernandez playing.
Well, he's healthy.
Okay. And a healthy Amendola, would they have been equipped to compete against that defense?
I mean,
is having a strong tight end game a key to beating that type of defense?
I think it would have.
I don't think so.
I think it would
so
have helped.
Nobody
yeah.
can beat this defense?
No, but.
No, I didn't say that. But I mean, they had those guys in Seattle 2 years ago and they lost. They scored 23 points.
Yeah, but I'm not.
I don't think that offense that you just described is any better than
so
Denver's.
So what's the key to beating that type of defense? A strong running game?
I think you have to play well. For
that would have helped, too. Yeah, because, I mean, Denver really did.
I don't think it was a talent, first and foremost. I think it was a want to. It was a they didn't match. They weren't ready, what we started with. They weren't. Demaryius Thomas, to me, didn't want to play. He didn't want to get hit. He didn't want to make plays. He knew the plays were going to be made on him, and he was fearful of it. It was they didn't show up.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's hard to, like, I can look there and I can see what you're saying, Fred, and I can put all of those guys, and I say, well, if the Patriots go out and play well, the way they're capable of playing offense against anybody. I saw them in that game that I just referenced. The Patriots moved the ball very well in that game at times. They marched up and down the field. They just didn't score, and they turned the ball over a few times, which is sort of atypical of what the Patriots generally do. So I don't know if the Patriots played really well, to Andy's point, if they don't turtle like Denver did,
right, And I don't think Gronk turtles.
No, I don't think Gronk would, but I think Hernandez would.
Ironically, is one of the softest players we've seen.
I think
come
Hernandez would turtle.
And I think he could have been hit early in that game and turned into Demaryius Thomas, where he's shying away and he's short arming stuff, and it may have led to similar ineptitude offensively.
Yeah. I just, you know, and I think
they would have been better with those guys, obviously, than the guys, like the team that played Denver 2 weeks ago, would not have had a shot in Hades to beat the Seahawks.
You know, as constructed, I think Seattle's going to be good for a while. There's no doubt. I mean, they've got a solid team, but, you know, the way people are talking about it, they shouldn't lose another game next year, you know?
No, see, that's ridiculous because they're forgetting what happened 2 weeks ago.
Right.
2 weeks ago, they were not the better team.
Right.
San Francisco should have won that game.
In Seattle.
In Seattle. They outplayed them for the majority of the game. Now, listen, give Seattle credit. They came up with key plays at key times, and they took advantage of a couple of really bad plays by Kaepernick. The interception before the last one was even worse than the game loser that Sherman deflected, the one that he threw to Cam Chancellor. He just threw it right to him. He said he thought he could get it over him.
You can also certainly argue that that series is different. You know, Denver doesn't know necessarily what it takes.
Exactly.
San Francisco and Seattle hate each other.
And they know
how to play
against
each other. They know how to play each other.
Right.
They know the level it's going to take. You know, that's one of those matchups where you look down the road. I'd be betting on teams that play them after they play each other. One of those just they beat the snot out
Pittsburgh
of each other.
And
let
Baltimore.
Down. Right. That's a different beast right now when those two fight.
That'll be a nice that would be a good choice for the opener for Seattle.
Well, that's what everybody's talking about, either Denver or San Francisco.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't do San Francisco.
I wouldn't want to do Denver.
I wouldn't want to do San Francisco because that's a game, like you always said.
Well, that's how I look at it.
But then they'll have 10 days to recover from it.
But I always look at that. That's a great game no matter when I put it on.
Exactly.
So why waste? The opener people are going to watch.
I don't want division games. I just don't. I see them twice a year.
But the same argument can be made
because they just came out
of
the Super Bowl.
Well, but, I mean, the Denver game is going to be a good game. You know, does Manning choke again when he goes up against this defense? You can certainly hope that.
So then the last thing I want to talk about we get to calls and emails is Peyton Manning. Because I got a lot of tweets to me during the game like, Fred, you must be loving this. You know, seeing Peyton choke like that, you must be loving it. And I hate to disappoint the Patriots fans, but I really didn't. I went into the game wanting to see a really good game. If the Broncos won, I'd have been happy for Wes Welker. If the Seahawks won like they did, I am happy for Pete Carroll. I just wanted to see a good game. So I wasn't, like, loving the fact that Manning was choking on it. I was disappointed not to see a good football game. Now, as far as Manning and his legacy, let's talk about whether or not you think now this takes him down a notch. Again, I hate to disappoint people, but I think that, you know, getting to the Super Bowl says a lot, even though, you know, he lost the game the way he did. I don't think this really does hurt his legacy that much, you know. Now, and I know
I think it does. I don't know what take it him down or not
means. I don't
know
what he could have done in this game. This
no, but if he wins this game, that it helps his legacy.
It
so
helps.
Losing it doesn't help it and or hurts it.
It doesn't help it, but does it really hurt it?
I think it does. But I also think it does from third best all time to fourth best or second. It doesn't make him from best ever to, middle of the tier.
Yeah. Like, if you're asking me,
he's near the top.
If you're asking me the hierarchy, it's one game. It doesn't matter to me. But I think overall, what I think of him is less, but not because because he played so bad. And you keep saying, what else could he have done? Well, great players have opportunities to make plays.
Yeah.
And I think that he, from the first pass of the game, was not himself, and I don't blame him on the safety, but the stuff that happened after that, I think he had chances to make better throws than he did. I thought he had opportunities to find guys. There was one of the plays that he had a guy wide open over the middle. He tried to throw a ball out to the sideline. I just don't think that he played well.
Yeah, I mean, I look back at 2007 with, the Patriots and the Giants, and,
that's a perfect example. Brady played a hell of a lot better in that game under duress than Manning did.
He did, but I think that his defense kept him in the game, obviously. Whereas...
And I think Denver's defense kept him in the game for the first half.
They shut down Lynch.
They did make stops, but
they were hitting Lynch in the backfield.
That game should have been over in the first quarter.
I mean,
Seattle constantly had the ball in Denver's 20-yard line, and they kept kicking field goals.
I don't think that Manning had much help in this game.
But Manning is not supposed to need help. He's supposed to be the guy that gets the other guys, gives the other guys help.
He makes everybody better. Yeah. He makes $20 million.
And
he's
listen,
your biggest player.
I don't want to come off as one of these Johnny Clark. I'm probably the biggest Manning apologist out of the four of us. I think that the fact that people think that he's a choking dog is ridiculous.
But
he did not play well. If you want to call him a choker the other night, I don't have any argument for that.
You know, look back at those old Denver Super Bowls where they would get waxed 55-10. You know, I don't know what
that's
John,
a talent issue.
I don't know what John Elway
that's totally
could have
different.
Done in that game.
You think that the Seattle was just that much better than Denver personnel wise?
I think the whole Denver team played that much that poorly.
But it starts with him. Those teams that you're talking about with Elway, they didn't belong on the field with those Niners teams.
They weren't the record-setting best offense in history.
I mean, they went into those games two touchdown underdogs. The Denver was supposed to have a chance to win this game.
Yeah,
most people
point.
Thought they were a favorite.
Yeah, it's a good point. But I just
the talent was not different, and that's why you say, like, can Seattle ever lose? Yeah, Seattle could lose. Those two teams could play next week, and it might be different.
I think Paul's wrong. That defense can win championships.
Oh, absolutely.
Listen, there's no argument. I've been ranting on this for 5 years, and you guys finally are
the
right.
Only thing we missed out on was the running part because they didn't really run the ball.
You missed
but
that.
But I really think that any quarterback.
You guys have been ranting. I've been ranting on this for 5 years, and you guys have finally.
You know, I said this going
Remember
into
when Paul said the NFC West was terrible.
Well, yeah. That was a long time.
I said
that
was like last year.
Yeah, early last year before Seattle was good.
You know,
I knew Russell Wilson was
before they had
good.
Four of the best defenses in football.
No, it was before Russell Wilson.
I've always felt this way in any big game, and really any football game, but especially these big games.
Keep St. Louis.
When you lose the battle on the line of scrimmage, you're going to lose the game, especially in those big games. And, you know, it was so obvious that, you know, they weren't winning on either side of the ball. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just seeing it a little different. Maybe I feel a little bad
maybe
for
Manning. Maybe you're the apologist.
But I just feel that there wasn't a hell of a lot he could have done.
But that's what I'm saying. Didn't you think the Patriots got dominated on both sides of the ball in that 07 in Arizona?
Yes.
Did you think that Brady looked like Manning?
He really couldn't do much until the end.
Well, he did something.
Yeah, at the end he did. You know, and then but then, you know, that last drive, you know,
he didn't look like himself.
He didn't look like himself. He didn't play a great game.
He felt pressured, but he didn't look like that.
No, he didn't.
No, he felt pressured. You know, he didn't have a lot of time. He knew it.
He didn't just float balls over the middle over Julius Thomas's head for an easy pick.
And, you know, that couldn't have been all Brady. Maybe Josh McDaniels felt pressured as well. And Belichick felt pressured as well. And maybe the play calling was affected by the Giants.
I would throw in Adam Gase and John Fox in there.
Yeah.
You know, Adam Gase is supposed to be, everybody was hyping him up. He has a photographic memory. He can recall every play they've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. And yet all they did was run these crossing patterns.
I have an idea. Let's run a shallow cross.
Well, it just felt like every play was, you know, we don't have time to do anything, so we have to do
the same thing over and over again that's not working.
Shallow crosses.
Well, I didn't mind the screens as much as the shallow crosses because, to me, you need to, you know, it's great when you're playing the Patriots and you have a shallow cross and there's 5 yards on either side.
And you can beat the guy.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't able to do anything.
You know, I keep saying every time a guy caught a ball, it felt like two Seahawks hit him.
Right.
Well, if he's running the old Jerry Rice, John Taylor slant, maybe you split the two guys and you get a big play out of it. You know, anything other than I'm just going to drag two guys across the field so that they're not moving downfield when they catch the ball. They are not picking up yards, and that's how you end up with three completions and punts because you're throwing 3 yard gains, 4 yard gains, and you're not getting anything out of them. You're not getting plays.
And I think part of that, and I do include, as Andy said, Fox and Gase, but I think part of that falls on.
Funny.
Well, that's their name.
I know.
You're saying more like a plural of the singular.
Yes,
and,
it's unbelievable.
Randall Gase.
Everybody knows the guy's name is Gase, but he's.
See, I thought it was Gase, like Case.
Okay, Gase.
That's a little different sounding.
You know who I was talking about?
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Thought it was the homosexual population in Denver.
It's like Andy gazing at foxes.
But that, to me, still comes back to Manning. Because, you know, you can't give the guy all the credit for being, you know, the de facto offensive coordinator and always under, you know, the pre-snap. No one's ever better in the history of football pre-snap. But yet, like Andy said, just continuing to throw these three-yard passes and getting two guys to tackle Welker and two guys to tackle Demaryius Thomas and two guys to tackle Julius Thomas. And by the way, did Eric Decker play?
He was actually on a free agent visit that day. That didn't come out yet. But
he's a choker. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Decker, just you can keep him.
Okay.
You can keep him. And I said that after the game here.
Yeah.
When I didn't notice him that night either. I mean, so the other team's got good cover guys. He's done. And then that little pass that they threw to him that he wanted no part of. He was like sticking his hands in like the water to see how cold it was. You know, it was like a little screen pass. It was like at his knees. He wanted no part of it. Mm. Eric Decker. If he was smart, he would sign like a 1 or 2 year deal to stay in Denver put up another 80-plus catches and 1,000 yards with, like, double-digit touchdowns, and then maybe when Manning's done, he can go somewhere else and prove that he's Peerless Price.
Is Pete Carroll a great coach? Great. Using the word great.
No. I think he's a great defensive coach.
I agree, but not a great head coach.
Yeah, I'm not willing to
there. They certainly built a good team, whether you want to give him the credit
for
that.
What makes him not a great head coach?
Over 3 years, though.
Yeah. Like, he did it for 1 year.
But that's okay.
No, it isn't. Bill Belichick's great because he did it for 13 years.
Right.
No, I'm saying right now, you know.
But that's your barometer.
Yeah. He did a great.
Your modern-day greatness. Or how about Andy Reid?
Was he great in 2013?
Yeah. And then goes to Kansas City and does it in Kansas City. They have reason over a long haul to be said they're great. Pete Carroll has done a very good job in a short period of time building a winner in Seattle.
Yeah, I think there's
maintain
only three.
Prove it to me.
Well, right? Only three guys okay.
Well,
still there.
All right, but the flip side of that, though, is you mentioned Andy Reid, a guy who's competitive all the time but has never won the big one. Would you rather be competitive all the time and not win the big one, or be a short turnaround guy like Carroll and win it?
Well,
I'd rather win
it. This is short turnaround.
Yeah,
he's
we don't know.
But
that's why we have to wait.
Yeah. No, but I mean, in previous stops, he had a short stint in New York. He had a relatively short stint here. Relatively short stint so far in Seattle, and he's won it.
Right.
Andy Reid's never won it.
But is Brian Billick a great coach?
If both of their careers ended
no,
right
Brian
now.
Brian Billick's not a great coach. Billick won a Super Bowl went right to Baltimore.
If Andy Reid and Pete Carroll never coach another game, I'll take Andy Reid every day of the week.
Right.
For their careers. He did a much better job
as a head
coach.
Now, if you're asking me who I want to run my defense,
right
Bill
now,
Bill Belichick or Pete Carroll?
If you're asking me who I want going forward
Pete
right
Carroll?
Now, I would take Pete Carroll.
And he's
pointing his finger all
around.
Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but
I'm not saying. Just saying.
To Eric's point, if you're asking me who I want going forward right now, I would take Carroll. I think that he's doing it well right now. But if you're asking me who's had a better career as a head coach up till now, Andy Reid.
Of course. Yeah.
I think has been a better coach, even though he hasn't won the big one, and Pete did.
But in Pete's defense, this is the first time that he's really been allowed to have the say
by the groceries and
how
he's
built
the
team.
Yeah. And I think there's only three guys that were there when he took over.
Right.
So it's his entire.
Oh no, he's done a great job over the short haul.
Him and John Schneider. I don't know who is the final say. I don't know how it works, but whatever they've done is they've done
Tom
it well.
Tom Opat.
And they didn't do it by loading up. You
see what
know?
I did there?
Yeah, I see what you did.
This was they had a
Fred will get that in about 20 minutes.
The type of players that they wanted to get, and they got them.
Well, they haven't had a chance to even load up. I mean, they were rebuilding, and then they hit on, you know, it's a little bit like, I know people have already made this comparison, but the early 2000 Patriots, when they started to win, you had a young quarterback who wasn't making the money, who was a late-round guy. You had guys who were playing above their level, who then later you have to pay, and you have to make decisions.
Right.
The difference is the lack of holdovers. Seattle doesn't have this core holdover group that I think Belichick benefited from here.
Right.
But show me what you're going to do in the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. How you're going to handle money. How you're going to handle the cap. How you're going to handle egos. How you're going to handle change.
That's right. That's right.
That and, you know, a funny thing, like just the visual. If I'm Seahawks fans, they already had to deal with Jay-Z for Robinson Cano. And then the first night after the Super Bowl, I see Russell Wilson sitting with
Beyonce
and Jay-Z. That scares me.
Sure.
That price just went up. That price isn't, you know, because there's a part of me that thinks maybe Russell Wilson is Brady. Maybe he's going to be a little bit of the, I do want to have a good team, so I don't need $20 million. I'll take $16 or whatever. That would scare me if I'm a Seahawks guy, because that guy, I'm guessing, is going for the Drew Brees contract. Drew Brees got $60 million. I'm Russell Wilson. I'm better. I'm younger. I want $65
million. Is that his agent?
No, not yet. But, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
so all those things are reasons
all the
why
stuff that
it's
Andy,
tough to repeat and
continue.
And be consistent. Right.
Right. But all the stuff that Andy talked about, too, I don't think is Pete's strong suit. You know, you need a guy to sort of
dealing with that
put
stuff.
The hammer down
right,
on that.
Right.
And I don't think that, you know, it's great that you're a player's coach. But sometimes you need
when all the players have their hands out,
right.
Now what?
Sometimes you need
we'll
to
see.
Be the voice.
We'll see.
We don't
that
know how
no.
he'll handle that. His own ship, his own championship, his own
right.
dot, dot, dot.
Because right.
he was successful
know,
doing it
so,
at USC.
So, right.
So
and,
that
and,
way.
And then he had to leave because
right.
he wasn't
he
able
was,
so, because he wasn't able to put the hammer down.
So it's that so, you know, knowing that, it's really surprising to hear all these analysts who've been covering the league for so long to immediately, you know, label them, you know, the great team for the next 6 years.
Well, that's what we do.
You
we're
know?
Reactionary.
Now, I'd be surprised
be
if they're not very good for the next 5 years. I'd be very surprised because they have enough young guys. They're not going to lose them all.
Yeah, but winning Super Bowls
but
is
they
different.
Could win 10 games next year and not make the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, I could
yeah,
easily
I don't see
that.
Be one and
see,
done.
I could easily
or,
see
you know,
that happening.
Yeah.
Easily.
I don't see them
happening.
Not making the playoffs.
In that division, without, they don't have a cakewalk division.
Without right. Mass.
Arizona could be emerging.
Without mass injuries to, you know, like Russell Wilson getting
hurt. I don't even see that.
I don't see them not making the playoffs.
Yeah.
But
that home advantage is big. It's notable. It's, you know.
Tavares Jackson got his ring.
Yes.
He's happy with that.
As he you played, once, right?
Didn't you? Yeah. Came in with a,
yeah,
a couple
end.
Of minutes
Did I
left.
Guarantee he'd get a ring?
No, I was just saying. As you,
sounds like something
as
I would
you,
say.
As you predicted for him.
And, of course, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Dead, you know.
Died on Super Bowl day, you know.
Such a tragedy.
I mean,
when you inject yourself with heroin, is such a tragedy.
He obviously had demons.
Well, his addiction is the tragedy. Whatever it was, that's...
I think alcoholism is understandable.
You just
everybody can have a drink. Drinking is socially acceptable. All of that. I think it's very easy to become an alcoholic. I think there's a difference between alcoholism and heroin addiction. You have to choose to take heroin the first time. You don't really choose to drink alcohol the first time. It is thrust upon you by your friends
or
your somebody.
Yeah, but what makes you have that choice? There's some weakness that makes you have that choice, and I think you shouldn't be judging people like that. Yeah.
I just don't think it's a tragedy. I'm sorry.
I Tragedies just love the fact that he just made
Marathon.
Me laugh when talking
Tragedies
about a guy's death.
Around the world. A guy they find with a needle in his arm isn't a tragedy.
I think anyone...
Tragedy for his children. It's an utter tragedy for his children.
Well, basically, whether or not he meant to, he took his own life. He knew the path he was on.
Oh, yeah.
And it was destructive.
His apartment was filled with drugs,
and
right?
And for some reason, he couldn't help it. You know, whatever that
demon
was.
Because he's an addict.
Well, yeah.
But I'm saying the first time. What happened the first time when you decided, I'm taking heroin?
I don't know. So that's why you
what
shouldn't
was so
judge.
Bad you needed to leave your world?
That,
or
that's
what was,
why you shouldn't
yeah,
judge.
I don't know I'm a judging. Whole lot about this stuff, but couldn't, I mean, you know.
Somebody ran by and jammed a heroin needle in him?
No.
And he liked it, so
no,
now he had to
but,
stick with
but
it.
But how does it start for any addict? How does it start
see,
for any alcoholic?
See, alcohol
is a drug.
But I mean, alcohol
maybe that
is one, thrust
maybe,
upon
maybe that
you
high
by
him,
everyone.
You know, he had the gene.
Alcohol is...
Okay, so maybe it started with alcohol, and maybe he got the taste of that.
So now alcohol is a gateway drug.
Well, that actually that
for some people,
yes. I just don't understand why you're I just don't understand why
you're
painting with such a broad brush.
Maybe not you, because you have the willpower of an ox.
Maybe I'm. I've never been so drunk that I thought about doing heroin.
They do. They're very.
Neither have I.
I don't. To me, there's a leap there. There is no leap to become an alcoholic.
But not everyone's like you.
I find that hard to
believe. Be happy that you wouldn't
I
do
am.
That.
Well, there's a ton of alcoholism in my family. I'm surprised I'm not a raging drunk. I really am.
No, you
but
take it out on us.
So sure. That might be a reason why you're not.
You take your rage out
You've
on us.
You've seen it.
Well, that could be.
The destructive ways
but
that it causes.
He's seen it. He's seen it in the industry. All these, like, I just
But
don't
maybe know. He doesn't have, How? Maybe he didn't have the
And we see it a lot with artists.
Right.
A lot of artists have this vulnerability, whatever it is.
Why?
I don't know. I'm not.
Why isn't it enough that everybody says you're the greatest?
Eric might have a better. Why?
Maybe
why?
It's you know it's maybe it's something about
Eric's
having to perform and always be on.
It's
and
a vulnerability.
Ready.
It's
know.
An opening that where they have this.
So
vacuum,
it's a performance enhancing drug.
Yeah, that they're trying
know.
To fill.
I don't
their
have
art
the,
and it's
the information
not enough,
about it,
and it's not enough. And they feel the pains of society more. Maybe
yes.
They're more sensitive than you and I, and so they feel these pains
I'm
more,
very
and they need to self-medicate more than we do.
That's kind of what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's like you don't. I mean, I understand your point. Like when a guy, to me, there's a difference between you know a 45-year-old guy, you know. Dying in some sort, you know, getting cancer.
Or having a heart attack
or
whatever.
And, you know, you find him with a needle hanging out of his arm and you got a bad batch of heroin. Okay, I personally feel differently about those two deaths.
Yep.
Okay? But to take it to his level, it's like you know, everybody, you know, alcohol's thrust upon you. You know, you had to decide the first time. Like, I don't feel bad. I just think you're painting with such a broad brush.
I can't understand why anyone would ever stick
I feel
that
bad.
Needle in the
I
first
feel
time.
Bad that anyone,
I can't I either, can't. But a lot
Even
of people
Even if you're
do.
At the party, to me, that's not the same as alcohol. You know, if you're at a party, some Hollywood party
it's
where everybody's
the, it's
doing
not
heroin.
The same as alcohol.
Right.
But it's not.
And not
I'm going to pass.
But a lot of people don't have the fortitude to say no.
But you really think the peer pressure to take heroin is like that overwhelming?
But
it
might have
just
been
because when you're
pressure.
In middle school and you're at a party and everybody that's pressure.
But
you're young, you're not able to fight
the
it's
first
not
time.
Just peer
the
pressure,
first time
though.
It might, Andy. The first time it might, and then once you do that, then you start developing the addiction. Then at that point, you're screwed.
But you're also,
but I'm
you're
in
also
case.
Once it's in, it's
but
in.
You're going from
then
like
you're
heroin
next.
Is the
then
first thing the guy did. Heroin's probably not the first that's heavy
no,
narcotic the guy
probably
took.
Not.
But I'm also making the case
and
that
you make the
you
steps.
Know, it's not. For
Says
some people, like
I've never
probably
had a drug
this
in my
guy,
life other than alcohol.
It's not just peer pressure. It's a need to escape and feel differently than I'm feeling right now. And, you know, whatever that is. And I think that's an individual thing. We can call it a weakness. Yeah, absolutely, because that weakness opens you up to that type of risk.
I'm not saying it's not a weakness. I'm not saying it's not something that a lot of people deal with. I'm glad I don't deal with it on that level. But I just, to me, it's not a tragedy.
Yeah, I agree with that part of it.
You know what's a tragedy? I don't know if you guys read the Globe this week. There was a front page story. A guy donated part of his liver to his brother-in-law who needed a liver. The guy died on the surgery table. The donor died on the surgery table. That's a tragedy. The man was a Bible-toting, religious person who was not even that close to his brother-in-law, but said, you know, this is family. I have a liver. You can do this. I know there's some risk. And he died on the that's a tragedy. Well, that is an utter tragedy.
Of course it is.
This is not a tragedy.
But don't you think that there was something innately wrong with this guy?
Who?
Philip Seymour
Hoffman. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And why isn't that tragic?
I just don't find it tragic.
Okay.
I don't find it tragic.
Well, now you're saying just
wrong with him.
So is Aaron Hernandez a tragedy? Because there was something wrong with him.
Yes, it's tragic.
Yes, it's a tragic
story.
Jerry
Sandusky, is that a tragedy?
It's a tragic story.
Because there's something wrong with him. There's something wrong with everyone.
Well, what part of the Jerry Sandusky thing?
I think if you feel compassion for your fellow human being, whenever there's something wrong with them,
you feel that's a tragedy in my mind.
Yes.
No one's mourning for Jerry Sandusky because he was sick.
No, I don't mourn Sandusky.
Philip Seymour Hoffman and Jerry Sandusky both had something wrong with them.
I am sure that there is a small segment of the population that feels some sort of compassion for his sickness.
Because it's the same.
It's a sickness.
He has an addiction to young boys. One has an addiction to heroin or drugs.
And it's a tragedy that it was allowed to go on that long and affect so many kids.
Yeah, that's
and no
the tragedy,
one
but I don't have any tragic feeling toward Sandusky.
Yeah, well, I mean,
like, this poor guy dealt with these demons. I don't look at it that way at all.
No,
I don't for either of them.
I don't think that's what
I don't look at it that way.
Well, that's not what I'm saying.
For
I'm
Hoffman
saying that
either.
It's tragic that he has that sickness about him.
He felt the need to have to do that.
That to me is tragic.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel bad that there's a person who thinks that way about young boys.
Not tragic. Yeah, stuff happens.
I feel bad that he died. I just don't think it's a tragedy.
Because I think if you use that logic, you can spin that on anyone who does anything bad or criminal.
I think it's a tragedy that at some point there wasn't some type of intervention or someone there to help him. Or
there might have been, though,
he didn't
Fred.
Feel like there was
there
someone
might,
there.
There
right?
might have
well,
been.
Right. Apparently,
we don't know that either.
Yeah. Apparently, this was a new – he was an addict, was clean, and then this is newfound. His longtime girlfriend, mother of children, had just – they'd separated because he was back into it.
And he fell back in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think if you're going to use that sort of barometer for tragedy, then all these things are tragedies. It's a tragedy that Aaron Hernandez is.
It's all part of the human tragedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's...
Easy Shakespeare.
It's
true, though. I agree with Fred completely on this.
I guess I just don't like the word choice.
Yeah.
Tragedy to me involves the innocent, the that are just... It's thrust upon them.
Yeah,
nothing they could have done about it.
And I think
no
decision
was
made. But I think you're
made.
Limiting the definition of tragedy. Is okay. What you do. You know,
call it a different word.
Yeah,
unfortunate.
That's fine. That's
a
fine.
Tragedy and things that are tragic can also.
Well, now
be
we're getting
separate.
Back to like my great story thing.
And people are pulling their hair out because they want to talk football.
It's the off season.
You know,
relax.
Coming full circle. I actually somebody had asked
was
me
was it tragic about Peyton Manning
on another radio show who should play Belichick in the movie, and I actually said one of the choices
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
He would have been a good one. By the way,
ain't happening now.
did anyone catch Frank Caliendo, the 30 on 30?
I heard it was great.
Oh, it was incredible.
And he
does
Brady
a Gruden. I thought it was John Gruden. And then he does Schefter, Adam Schefter of all people. Spot on. And then he did a Belichick, which I think was the weakest of all of them, but was still really good.
And he had Brady as a chihuahua or something?
No, he had a dog on his lap.
And it was called Brady.
Oh,
That's what I was told, that Brady was his lap dog.
I actually missed that. But it was.
And I found that funny without even seeing it.
It was stupendous. It might be online. I'm not sure.
Stupendous. That was a random for Fred to say. Stupendous.
It was really good. So, all right,
he plays for Adam Gase.
Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline.
Gase.
508-298-0398.
You like boys and Gase.
Is the Ace Ticket Hotline. 855-PASS-500.
You're my Josh Boyce now? Or
Eddie's been holding on for 47 minutes. Hey, Eddie.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Hey,
what tragic you had to wait this long to get on the air.
Hey, it's all good, man. But, hey, Andy, speaking on that, man, I kind of feel how you feel a little bit, but remember, man, you have kids, so you just never know. I have kids, too.
I know. That's why I'm never going to stick a needle between my toes.
I know, but you never know if your kids will have something that comes up in their lives that, you know, you just hope and pray that, you know, they're strong enough. But
they'll blame parenting if that happens.
Yes. And they'll be right.
I don't know what they'll be doing, but that's what I'll be doing.
I got you. All right. Anyways, man, back to this. Man, that was a good Super Bowl for me. I don't know about you guys, but that was
horrific for me.
That's a real defense. That's what I thought. I was like, wow, finally I get to see a real defense, you know?
How do we get one of those?
Exactly how I was feeling, man. But I know that, unfortunately, I'm not, you know? I'm not married to Giselle. It's just a dream, you know? I'm never going to be able to get one. So that's how I felt about this defense, man. I mean, you know, we're never going to have a defense like that, you know?
Now the question, though, is, like a realistic Patriots perspective, if you come off that, are you left wanting that defense and that's what you're going to try to do, or are you left saying, well, I have to build the offense that can beat that defense? You can't have both.
Yeah.
Right? We've seen enough in this league where you're not going to have the dominant offense, dominant defense, great everything. It's not going to happen.
I did leave it saying, you know, I did leave it saying that this validates what we've been saying, that you got to get pressure on the quarterback. They were weak on the ends. You got to get some type of rotation there.
It also validates big Bill Belichick.
John Abraham.
You know what it validates? Razai Dowling. Yeah. I'd really like to have a big corner who is athletic. They drafted one. Right. He just sucked. He wasn't that guy.
And it gets to the other point about you can win in this league. There's many ways to do it. There's a Patriots way. There's also a Seattle way. There's also a Ravens way. And they're all right if you get the right people.
It's not crazy if it works.
If you pick the right people, any of those ways can work.
I like your last point the best. Yeah. Because I hate the whole thing, well, that's not the way to do it. I hate that.
Right.
How many different ways do teams have to win Super Bowls before you have to say that the way the Patriots do it isn't the only
good, it's not the only right way. It's a way if you get the right people.
But it also, to me, magnifies early in the decade, Bill Belichick was hitting on late-round picks and was getting the Seattle praise. You know, you were taking Eugene Wilson, making him a star. You were taking David Givens, making him a star. Dan Copen was key. Asante Samuel. Well, that train feels like it's really come to a screeching halt, and Seattle is now doing that.
Right, and the question is why? Why has it come to a halt for the Patriots?
Because it's hard to do.
Do you want a bad reason?
Yeah.
Luck.
What about coaching?
It's luck. Yeah. I'm sorry, you can't get Richard Sherman by design.
No.
Yeah, you know why Richard Sherman was a fifth-round pick? Because he spent most of his college career playing wide receiver. And he changed late in his college career to cornerback. He ran a pedestrian 40 time, and there was also conversations there that Harbaugh and Sherman
butted heads. Earl Thomas.
But I have a question.
Earl Thomas was a high pick. No luck there.
But they made
the right
pick.
But Cam Chancellor was a fifth-round pick.
Yeah. Does Pete benefit from being in college? Do you think he's going to run out, maybe, that he knew all those guys because he recruited him, he played against him? You know,
Bruce Irvin, remember, he talked
a lot about Bruce Irvin, and I knew this guy, and blah,
why not?
Blah, blah.
Very possible.
So is this going to come to a screeching halt when he's enough years removed where all these guys are just, he's like any other coach, I got to scout him and find him?
And then even if that happens, we won't know. Will it be because the pipeline ran out of the guys that he had the intimate knowledge of, or... Again,
you just missed.
Can't get Asante Samuel in the fourth round every year.
It won't
year.
Matter because he's got his ring at that point. Right. So what is
that
matter?
Argument?
That's the way Bill probably looks at it now. Yeah. Like, well, you know, like,
I got my three.
I got three.
Yeah,
he's still got that right. paint though.
And Eddie, go ahead.
Boat.
What were you going to say, Eddie?
Guys, under that argument, Rex Ryan's defense works as well. It's the philosophy that works with Pete as well as the players. They play fast and aggressive.
Yep.
That works against the pass happy NFL and against non mobile quarterbacks. At best, it works the best. Quarterbacks that have no mobility at all, like Peyton, like Tom, it works even better. So, yeah.
That is another aspect of it, the philosophy. The aggressive 4-3, shoot gaps, get after it, defense, swarming, versus read and react, mm-hmm. and we're going to be in the right spot, and they'll make a mistake sooner or later, so we don't need to force anything.
I do think the style is a huge part of it.
Thanks, so Eddie. You know, now Robert Kraft with Felger and Maz, they talked about loading up and all that stuff, and I think the point Kraft was trying to make is that, again, like we said, you can do loading up, you can do that, but there's parts of this that are out of your control. You know, so you load up, and what happens with that guy that you got, that whether it's Patrick Willis or, Julius Peppers, what happens when he gets hurt? You know, so there's different ways to do it. The way the Patriots choose to do it is kind of to spread that thing out and try to be consistent every year instead of loading up.
Yeah, but my counter argument to that would be, you had that this year. You lost your best tight end, the guy you wanted to be your tight end, your star, and your tight end position sucked. You had no tight end position.
But you still remain competitive.
Because
but
of Brady and the other stuff you had. It was irrelevant to the fact that you paid Matthew Mulligan or Michael Manawanui to be your backup tight end. You lost Vince Wilfork and Tommy Kelly, and your run defense sucked because you put undrafted free agents on the field. You didn't have any better backups to your stars.
No, but
because
you
didn't.
You lost Tommy Kelly and Wilfork and Gerard Mayo.
Drives me crazy.
And,
right.
You know.
And you didn't survive because you had Chris Jones. And you paid him more than everybody else plays their Chris Jones.
But why?
You survived because you had Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And
that's why I get so angry. Exactly.
Why is the anti-load up crowd convinced that if you load up and it doesn't work, you suck? You can load up and get a couple of injuries, but still be relevant.
That's not what Kraft said.
He actually, I think, used a specific example that I think backs my point by saying, look what happened to Baltimore. What happened to Baltimore? They won a Super Bowl, and the next year they were very relevant, and they got knocked out of the playoffs on the last day of the season.
But yeah. Kraft's point...
Despite losing a lot of those load-up guys with injuries.
Kraft's point is not that if you load up and it doesn't work, you're going to suck. Kraft's point is that's one way to do it, but it's no guarantee. It's no guarantee that when you load up, you're going to win the Super
Bowl. I think to Paul's point, most people would rather take the chance. I mean, how often do you have a year where you get a rash of injuries like that? More often than not, you have the guys you signed.
You're going to have injuries every year.
You can't load up every year.
No, but no one's asking you to load up every year.
But you know what I am asking you to do?
You can pick a year and you can load up.
How about this year? How about I pick the year in the last two or three of Tom Brady's career?
Exactly.
I'm not saying year one of Tom Brady, load up.
You can pick a year and load up and have a chance.
Yeah.
But you can also have a chance every year. The way they do it.
Yeah,
but,
and I think loading up, you have a chance every year.
If you're not factoring in Brady.
If you pick the right players and you load up, you'll have a chance to win every year.
You can't load
up every
year.
See, I actually don't agree with that.
No, because I think you're going to lose Brady at some point, and then loading up has unloaded. I'm talking about when you have the quarterback.
But we're talking right now. I'm not talking philosophically. I'm talking about the New England Patriots are on an unprecedented 13-year run with Tom Brady, whose career is coming near to an end. And people like Charles Barkley say you're going to effing suck when he and Belichick leave. This isn't a generic philosophical load up. It's do we load up at the very end of Brady's career because we know we have the quarterback to
win? That's a good question. But I would say that the way that they thought this team was going to be constituted going to the season, they were pretty loaded, I thought. I think they were pretty loaded.
No.
Well, you couldn't have, Eric. No. You know? You had them at 9-7.
Why not?
I mean, they weren't loaded.
They still had deficiencies on defense.
They had an offense last year that was very good, and it was lacking one element. What did you think it was?
The outside receiver.
Did they get any?
No.
So how do you say they loaded up?
They lost half the offense.
Exactly.
I think they swung and missed with Emmanuel Sanders, and I think they swung and missed with John Abraham.
So how can you say they loaded up?
I didn't say they loaded up.
How can you say they were loaded?
They had a lot of talent on this team.
They had talent, yes. But they didn't have as much as they could have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's all I want to do. I don't want to load up every single year. 07 to me, you loaded up.
Exactly.
It didn't hurt you in 08. It didn't hurt you in 09. It didn't hurt you in 10. You don't have to load. You don't load up every single year.
I don't think they loaded up the way people, typically think about loading up.
Fred,
you
know, they spent more money that offseason than any other in the Belichick
era. Getting Wes Welker at that time, people didn't say, oh, they're loading up when they signed Wes Welker.
How about Adalys Thomas, the highest paid defensive free agent?
That was.
How about Randy Moss, the highest profile guy ever? It's not about money. It's about talent.
They didn't go out and target Randy Moss. He fell in their lap.
I don't care how they got him, Fred.
Well, Wes Welker didn't fall in your lap.
No, they targeted him.
I actually argued you overpaid.
They targeted Adalys Thomas.
I don't remember they targeted Dante Stallworth. Wes Welker going, oh, they're loading up.
Wait a minute, Fred.
People said they overpaid the guy.
Well, people did say they loaded up because they signed Dante Stallworth, Wes Welker.
Yeah. They had the other guys they loaded up with.
Kelly Washington, people thought was still the first round pick, not the free agent.
Kyle Brady, Sammy Morris.
Everybody said they loaded up. You must have missed
Adalys Thomas
spring
on defense.
Welker was not one of the guys that I thought they loaded up with.
No, he was the guy that they overpaid.
Kyle Brady, Sammy Morris.
No, Adalys Thomas, Randy Moss, Dante Stallworth, Kelly Washington.
Again,
those guys were loading
Randy
up.
Randy Moss wasn't a guy that was like the prime free agent
available. Yeah, but Fred, they went after him.
No. Fred, they signed three first-round pick receivers.
That's what they
signed three first-round pick receivers in the course of a month.
When people
that's not loading
coming,
up. Then.
Coming off a season in which they did not have an NFL receiver.
When people are talking about loading up, they're talking about going out and spending money.
No.
They're talking about acquiring talent,
I'm talking about
Fred.
You need to spend money most of the time to get that. Unless you get lucky.
Okay, whether
it's
money or not.
But if you trade for Larry Fitzgerald, you load it up.
Yes, Absolutely. But
wait
they
a
didn't have to do.
But wait a minute.
They didn't have to do for Randy Moss what they would
so
have
Fred,
to do to get Larry Fitzgerald.
Well, yes. So let's
obvious.
Wait,
right?
So let's say.
And if they had to have done that for Moss, would they have?
Paul just walked out.
Would they have? If they
no.
had to give. Right. That's
no.
my point.
No, there is no question.
Even
that
in 07,
things came together nicely.
If the Raiders wanted a first round draft pick and you know all
they
this,
wouldn't
they wouldn't have gotten them.
Obviously, but they still would have had signed a first round pick named Dante Stallworth, a first round pick named Kelly Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They would have given
$18 million Kyle Brady.
Too much.
Was he a first round pick?
Yes, Wes Welker. Fred, they went after it.
Yeah, the only guy that they spent a lot of money on that
it's
year
not
was
it money,
Thomas.
Fred. It's about talent.
I don't care how much money they spent.
I actually think they spent money on
they
welfare.
They tried to get talent this year, but
$18 million was a lot of money.
And Stallworth was a big money guy,
well,
too.
Now, Stallworth had was an NFL contract. $42 million, except only like three of it.
But wait a minute. He had that big bonus due the second year, and
right.
they let him go.
Are you equating Emmanuel Sanders' talent to Dante Stallworth?
That's what he's doing.
Are you really saying that?
Yeah.
That's the equivalent of Dante Stallworth, Kelly Washington, Kyle Brady,
Kelly
Sammy
Washington.
Morris, Wes
Kelly
Welker.
Kelly Washington at that
at
point
that time he was still a relevant
former
player.
First round pick who people thought this guy's got first round talent. Maybe he's
and
a
how much
stud
money
waiting.
Did they get him for?
Not a ton.
Right. That's
you're
my
focusing
point.
On
they
the
gave
money.
Dante Stallworth $42 million.
They didn't. You just said they didn't.
But on
it was
paper,
a fake, it was
in free agency
right,
money,
and they let him go the next year.
But Fred, that's irrelevant.
And oh my
God, all these deals are the same.
Look what happened.
All these deals are the same.
They never intended to pay him big money.
You don't know that.
And they didn't.
So
they
don't know that.
So they went 18-1.
You do not know that, by the way. You have absolutely no idea that. Because if they hadn't traded for Randy Moss, Dante Stallworth would have made more plays, and there's a chance Dante Stallworth would have stayed on a $42 million contract.
And oh my God.
So you don't know that.
They went 18-1, and then it all fell apart after that when they all left. Oh my God, I couldn't believe how bad they sucked.
Because they didn't load up.
I can't believe how bad
they
sucked.
They didn't burden themselves with all these contracts.
Fred, you can sit there and make this about money all you want.
It's
about
not about money. It's
not
about
money.
Look, I think every year, every team tries to get the best talent they can. Every team does that. That's not loading up.
I don't think the Patriots.
You
do
actually
yes, it is.
Said they didn't get the best talent they could have.
But that's
Emmanuel Sanders and John Abraham.
I don't think they did load up. I think the Patriots.
They knew they were better.
Right guys,
when
not the most talented.
When people talk about loading
guys.
Up, they talk about going out there and being aggressive and spending money.
It's about
that's
the
not
talent
what,
that
okay.
you get.
I can't. It's about going out there and being aggressive.
I can't tell you what
going
the,
to get what you want and what you need.
Right,
and it doesn't
right,
matter what you
did
spend.
Did not do that last offseason.
I don't care about the money.
Right,
and I don't know what they think of when they say loading up. To me, it's about acquiring the best
talent
that I can.
That's what.
So
it,
every
that's
year
what matters,
they try
talent.
To load up. Then
I don't think they do.
I don't think they do.
And I think you just had examples of guys where they didn't
guys,
do it.
The only
better.
The only thing that
they knew those guys that they were interested in were better than what they had, and they didn't get them.
Why?
I don't know.
They didn't
willing.
Want to spend the money.
Exactly.
But it wasn't a lot of money. So I'm
right.
not talking about giving Mike
Wallace. We're
not Wallace,
talking $100 million.
I'm not talking about getting Mike Wallace for $100 million. You don't have to
Ooh,
do that.
Emmanuel Sanders 2.2 or whatever the hell it was.
Instead of 2.5, I'm not going to give
him.
Oh,
and I'm on record saying they missed out on him. That was a mistake.
They were not
so
aggressive.
They didn't do everything
that
they
was
could.
A mistake.
They were not aggressive.
So they weren't as talented as they could.
But to me, loading up is being aggressive
in
talent
Emmanuel
acquisition.
Emmanuel Sanders is loading up. I don't look at that as a
I don't
up.
Either, but I'm talking about getting the most talented players you can.
Right.
And you say they do that every year. I think they're more interested in getting the right players every year.
Well,
not the most talented,
but
the right players.
That fits in as well.
Right, and I don't agree with the philosophy.
Yeah,
I think that you're able to be competitive for two reasons. One's named Bill Belichick, and the other's named Tom Brady. And Charles Barkley is right. If they keep this same philosophy, after those guys are gone, they're going to suck.
And here's another argument in the,
he said
in the
another word too
in the loading up toward the end of Brady's career argument. He's not the same player he was 5, 6, 10 years ago. His skills are starting to diminish. We've seen that. He didn't have his best season. You need to put more talent around him to make up for some of that, especially now that he only has a couple of years left on his contract.
I can't argue with that.
So I think the argument that people are saying they need to loading up meaning acquiring talent, not necessarily spending $100 million on one player. Get the talent around Brady. Get more talent around him so that maybe they can make up for some of the deficiencies
and
that
he's starting
to show.
I think they got caught with their pants down. I think they went into the season thinking they had that talent.
But you know how you make fun of us for, you know, when we say, you know, loading up, it means spending money and this and that. And you make fun of us and you make good points too. I mean, this is why it's a good argument. It's why it's a good discussion. But the other part of that is you also think that the loading up crowd thinks that you want to mortgage the future.
Yeah,
and I think the Dante Stallworth contract is a very good example of you don't have to load up and mortgage the future.
Right.
You can structure these things in such ways that if it works out great, you can hold on to a guy, and you have the power.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, and you end up getting Randy Moss, because Andy makes a great point that people don't talk about with 07. Stallworth was the target, was the apple of their eye. And then all of a sudden, a couple of months later,
right,
like you said, Fred,
right,
they didn't have a target. I totally agree with you. Randy Moss wasn't the object of their offseason. But all of a sudden, you get this immense talent who falls into your lap. Talent that falls into your lap.
Right.
And now you're really good. I already have Stallworth.
Mm-hmm.
I already have Stallworth, and I'm already paying him a good amount of money.
And Welker.
Today, they might have said, we already have Stallworth. We're not going to go out and get Moss. We already have him.
Oh,
I think that they went on a little bit of a departure from what their norm is, and they said, we're going for it. We're going to get this guy, and we're going to have three guys. And then we're going to have three guys on the outside and one guy in the slot. Some of them are going to hit.
Yeah, I don't know. I really doubt that if you put the truth serum in Nick Caserio or whoever was in charge at that time and Bill Belichick, they would say, yeah, we were going for it. We were loading up. I think they looked at the options available and said, well, yeah, we can do this. Let's do it. I don't think it was like a game plan to let's go for it in 07. I don't think so. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I don't think it was
that
conscious.
It's a combination of the two.
Yeah, I agree with you.
There were players available and the atmosphere, like, Adalys Thomas was the perfect storm.
Perfect storm.
It worked. He wanted to be here. All, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So those are all factors. It's never as black and white as we try to make it out to be. My
I agree
greater
with you, Fred,
problem
on that.
With Robert's comments are, I agree with him in general. The overall philosophy, I think, is tremendously sound. It's been proven to work here. But you can't just stick with the general philosophy when Tom Brady is coming to the end. That's a difference.
We're going to continue to do it the same way.
Because yeah. I can't assume that we're going to be good enough at the quarterback position to make the overall value of the rest of the roster work.
But
we could suck at the quarterback position, and we can be as deep as anything you want. We're going to suck because we have no quarterback.
So should money be a factor in acquiring talent this year?
If it has to be, yes. I don't know what the guys you're talking about.
Wait, what? Well, I don't understand the question.
I mean, should it be a factor in who you bring in?
Well,
should
let me just tell you this. Not every year would I say, I'll give up three first-round picks for Vincent Jackson and Darrell Revis. This year I would.
Okay.
Because I'm going for it. I know Brady's just about done. It's unfortunate that those first-round picks.
That's a good, example.
But I also think those guys are talented.
Yeah, but that's...
Like, I wouldn't have done that for Mike Wallace last year. Because I don't think he's that good.
And that's a good... To me, that brings the conversation to another...
Conditions on the ground have changed,
well,
as
it
you
also
say.
It also changes the direction a little bit. It doesn't always have to be about money.
No,
you know,
it's about aggression.
That's what I'm talking
first
about.
Round picks
for me, it's aggression.
Yeah,
like, I think they loaded up on defense 2 years ago in the first round. They
didn't
loaded
say
up.
That about
they
10
went for
ago?
It with Dante Hightower and Chandler Jones.
And that's
they
not
saw
a money
two guys
thing.
They wanted. They saw two guys that fit. They went aggressively and went and got them, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's kind of loading up on the front seven.
Is moving up in the first round loading up?
It's being aggressive.
Yeah, it's all
yeah,
of
it's
it.
All
it's
part
money,
of it.
It's trades, it's free agency.
It's getting the best players that you can get, Fred. Getting
talent,
I think it is loading
getting
up.
Talent however you get it and for however much you can get.
Maybe
because
they gave Kelly Washington an extra 100
million. Every team tries to load up every year. I don't think you can make that blanket
type of
definition.
I don't.
For
I don't
up.
Think they do.
I think loading up is going above what you usually do. Right?
And I think
above
that
you what
move,
you usually
otherwise, why call it loading up?
Right. Yeah, it's above what you usually do.
Right. So
and you don't think that was above what they usually do?
But what Eric just said is getting talent any way you can get it. I think every team tries to do that every year.
No, but what like Andy's point
I don't
about
think every
high
team
power,
tries to load up every
But you don't
year.
Think teams have like 3 year plans, 5 year plans?
Absolutely.
But then certain stuff comes together and they go,
yeah.
We got to go for it.
Conditions on the ground change.
Right. And that's what this is right now.
A Randy Moss falls in your lap. You go for
well,
it.
Yeah, but also
but falling in your lap is not going for it.
Well, right. See, you also think that it wasn't a conscious decision to get Chandler Jones and Dante Hightower. You probably think, well, these guys slipped and they were available and they liked them and they went up and got them. I look at it as, yes, I think Andy's right.
No, I think it was
I think
a
it
conscious
is a
decision.
Yeah,
I
think
well, that's loading up.
That's loading up. It's out of the
it's
norm.
A, it's a partial.
To use your example, it's departure from the norm.
Okay.
They don't normally trade up in the first round. They have done it a couple of times, but not a lot.
No.
More often than not, they trade down.
So when they trade up, that's loading up whenever they do that?
I think that when you get aggressive
and
you
go after
a guy.
It's one of the aspects of trying to.
Why are you being an a-hole? Now you're just being an a-hole.
I'm just saying.
You are. You're trying to poke the three bears in front of you and cause a fight.
No, see, but I
you
actually,
are, and I know you are because you're laughing.
But
yeah,
I actually
your
I
face
actually
is the
like
color
it
of your shirt right now.
Because it's
laughing so hard.
It's not a silly one that we normally go we're going to great extremes. That's
it's
why
also
I like
a very
this.
Relevant timely.
Yeah, and I think Robert brought up a good point. You know, the thing there was a couple of things that kind of scared me as my old, you know, once in a while when I see these kinds of things I go back to like you know, 15, 20 years ago when, you know, I was one of, you know, like, not to sound like Robert, but I was sitting in the aluminum benches.
On the cold, hot
on the
benches.
Cold, you know, and
punching
I was sitting
guys.
There, you know.
Yeah. Until they stopped breathing.
Okay. And one thing that really kind of concerned me as Joe fan, you know, like I'm Paul the fan, was, you know, him talking so much about the injuries and the unfortunate circumstances. And I don't think the Patriots fell short in 2013 because of injuries. I think that it was a huge issue in their team. I don't think they were good enough. Injuries or no injuries. And there's no such thing as no injuries. Everybody says, you know, if they had stayed healthy, well, who's healthy? Okay, the Patriots lost more good players than every other team. But who's healthy? No one. And I think that you can sit there and you can say, well, they remained relevant because of the attention to detail that Bill takes to the bottom of the roster. Andy brought up some of the individual guys that left, and I don't think that you were okay because you had Silver Solinga. I don't think that you were okay because you had Daron Harmon, you know, playing behind Steve Gregory. You're okay because you have a great coach and a great quarterback,
and you're that's able a to big part of to it. Win. The bottom of the roster part is the, you know, Bill said it about Dante when in that statement he treated everybody the same, and I think that's what Bill does. He prepares everybody to play. So just because you spent an extra $82,000 on your, you know, fourth string safety or whatever it may be, I think part of the reason they have a chance to succeed is the way they're coached.
The preparation.
Yeah, they are prepared.
Sure.
You know,
so
Josh
good.
Klein I mean, is prepared to play because Dante says,
so good.
I don't care how good or not good you are. You're not Logan Mankins, but I'm going to prepare
I'll
you,
get you ready to
get
play.
Your best out of you and be good enough so that we can still compete. And he would be able to do that regardless of how this philosophy of loading up, not loading up, spreading the money, bottom of the roster. I actually don't think the Patriots have had the best backups over the years. This philosophy, it's always, you know, it's the best 53 and all that crap. I think a lot of times some pretty poop-bum backups have taken the field here that aren't that good.
It's like the whole thing, like, we get caught up in the scoreboard, like the Percy Harvin thing that we talked about early in the show. Well, you know, they went out and they went for it and they got this guy and they won the Super Bowl. Well, yeah, he played two games. He didn't have anything to do, you know, loading up, so to speak, to use your terminology, Fred, didn't have anything to do with why they won the Super Bowl, but you know, the bottom line is it's going to say on paper, went out and acquired Percy Harvin. Percy Harvin returned a kick for a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Right.
That was a big part. It wasn't a big part of it.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, yeah, you can continue to win games because, you know, and you can tell yourself it's because you have this great bottom of the roster. But I'm sorry, I don't think that their backups are any better than anybody else's backups. I think their coach is better than everybody else's coach. So, like, in one hand, you might think I'm taking a swipe at Bill.
No, I
but
hear
on the
it.
Other hand, it's because
an ultimate
of,
compliment.
It's because of my immense respect for his coaching ability, and I,
sure.
and that, I'm not overstating it. I think he is so much better than any other coach in the league. And he's able to get, like Andy just said, you know, Josh Klein is ready because of the program that Bill has with Dante. And
now you got Dave
Guglielmo.
Googs. Is that his nickname?
Googs. That's what I was calling him with Jackie.
Speaking of all the changes, interesting that Pepper Johnson went to the Bills. Flew in the face of my whole theory that he was going to Houston with Rack. And
he poured in a storm.
He went with Schwartzy.
Yeah, leads me to believe that wasn't quite his decision or quite as mutual a decision it was made out to be.
Right.
Because I didn't think he landed in a place that was obvious.
I think he might have given the team an ultimatum, and the team said, we can't accommodate that ultimatum, and they parted ways.
Yeah, that was interesting when that came out. That I mean, he's with Schwartzy, so there's obviously the Belichick connection. They were probably together in Cleveland, right? Schwartz and Pepper, so there's probably a minor connection there. But that's not what I had envisioned when I thought he was maybe just trying to make – I thought maybe he was going for it, quote-unquote, in his own career. This doesn't feel like going for it when you have the same job in Buffalo.
Yeah, the only thing that I could possibly say is that maybe, you know, Schwartz figures if he has a good year as defensive coordinator,
he'll be in
the mix for head coaching jobs next year, of which there'll probably be five or six of those again because
there always
seems like there are always. And then maybe he can move up, but I'm with Andy.
I'm not buying.
I'm with Andy on the whole. The fact that he took a lateral move and stayed, you know, and went to a place like Buffalo.
Right.
As opposed to going for a specific reason, which we kind of thought Rack, defensive coordinator in waiting kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go back to the phones. Chris with a TIAN. Hey, Christian.
Show of the year so far. Show of the year.
Thanks.
Yeah, we've only been
February 4th.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, happy birthday, Will, by the way. I know you're not listening. But that's
I hope he's not listening.
Hopefully he's in school.
and my kid committed to college.
Oh, congratulations.
Where's he going?
Yeah. Springfield College.
Nice. Yeah. The home of Wright Buttock. Right?
That where Wojcik went?
Oh, I thought so. Maybe not.
They got Mardi Gras out there, too.
What does that mean?
The strip club?
Tell Connor.
I'll be sure
Mardi
to tell him.
Connor, making it rain.
Short John from UMass Amherst.
Bitches! Sorry, Christian.
That's okay. No problem. Used to it.
Second best show of the year now.
That's why I love you guys. Wow. You know, just so impressed Sunday. That was just an awesome, awesome display. I don't care who they played Sunday, Seattle. They were going to beat them.
It was
their
day.
They were firing. And, yeah, you know, Manning, obviously, you know, looked just awful. Embarrassing. Sorry, you don't want to disagree with you, Peyton, but you were embarrassed. And it was embarrassing.
I would have been embarrassed. I don't know.
Welker was.
Why do you think he thought that was such an insulting question?
I don't know. I was a little surprised that he took offense at it.
I was surprised for him.
Yeah.
He so rarely gets flustered
but
like that.
But I think
that,
for him,
flustered.
Embarrassment means like you
different.
Didn't prepare.
Yeah.
You didn't. I got beat today because they were better. But I was prepared. I didn't do anything that would lead me to be embarrassed. Embarrassing is selling yourself short or not.
He was saying you're also selling the opponent short.
Right. Yeah.
I think he took it a different way than it was intended. Yeah. He meant, were you embarrassed
by your performance?
Playing so poorly in a big game.
Yeah.
And I think that he took it the way kind of Andy went with it. And, you know, I've never seen him get – could you actually hear that soundbite?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've never heard him that flustered.
Did you see the visual?
He's pretty mad. Yeah.
Oh, no,
he was mad.
But he couldn't find the words. Yeah.
He was pissed.
He is a guy who
and
almost
did that
always
come
says
after
the
Welker?
Perfect thing.
Because that's the only thing I didn't know.
I don't know.
Like, did the guy, you know, go to interview
Welker?
Yeah. Welker goes, it's embarrassing. And did he go to Manning?
I don't know.
Because
but
I actually
with the
read
way
the AP story, and there was no reference to Welker's quote in the AP story, which I thought was doing a disservice to readers. Because another, you know, one of his top receivers called it embarrassing.
Yeah.
So it's not this lone reporter who, like, said something so ridiculous.
Oh, and unless the AP story came out before Welker's comments.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't know
the origin of the quote, the question, but
I'll tell you the origin, the embarrassing performance they put forth.
No, I mean I don't know if he had said it before or after the chronology. I should say
etymology.
But I do think you're right, Andy. I think he looked at it as if there's nothing, we go out and compete on the field, and there's nothing embarrassing about losing
and all that.
I think that was his point.
Yeah. And I think going forward, I don't know how you guys feel, but I think this is probably.
The end of the road as we know it.
No, I didn't say that. I think it's the most important offseason for this team in regards to the free agency period. We all know what the stock that they really have sort of added on the defensive side of the ball and the investment that they've made through the draft. And last year at the wide receiver position through the draft, I was singing this 2 years ago, last year when we lost to the Ravens in the championship game, you need someone that teams fear on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You need a mean SOB that guys don't want to go near, that guys are scared of. Mm-hmm. Because that's still, fundamentally, if Sunday didn't show us, it sure did. That's what this game comes down to. Imposing your will on the other, on the guy on the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
And Demaryius Thomas pooped his pants.
Yep.
Scared.
Pusillanimous.
Scared. And
pusillanimous.
Pusillanimous. Hats off to Walker. He was like the toughest one that was only gonna, you know,
right.
showed up. But
right.
you gotta have that hammer. You gotta
we got Adrian Wilson coming back.
Yeah. Did you see his foot? Do you already have Achilles surgery too on top of like he had something with his
What about Arm and Hammer?
Yeah, so we got a guy coming off an ace an Achilles and a guy coming off who knows what.
A mysterious illness.
He may not even have a leg anymore that they removed.
It was an infection.
Yeah, it was an infection.
Yeah.
What if it was one of those flesh-eating infections and he doesn't have a thigh bone anymore or something?
And I don't think you can get one of those guys in the draft.
Read one email. And all
well,
if we, why don't we work a deal with Billy O'Brien and go up and get Jadeveon Clowney?
There you go.
That'd be pretty sick.
That would be loading up.
That would be starting to load up.
All right.
See
thanks,
Christian.
All right. Holding on for over an hour now is Chester from Portland. Hey, Chester.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Good.
You guys are talking about actors for Bill Belichick. My vote would go to Kevin Spacey. I think he'd kill it. But
he could do it. He could do it.
Wow. Yeah, it's not bad.
I think he'd be great. You dress him up a little older. I think he'd fill that role.
Yep.
Hey, just want to talk Super Bowl, guys. You know, two big keys to this victory for me. Number one, keeping Peyton Manning on the sideline was huge. I mean, just absolutely, you couldn't see Denver getting in any kind of a rhythm from that point. And then deferring that kickoff was also smart. You know, that's all a big Bill Belichick move always. And it was the key to maintaining that momentum, you know, through that second half. But, you know, hats off to the Seahawks. I think we're all reaching to see what we can do with our team to, you know, get to that kind of level. But, you know, let's face it, they just played their best game of the year. You know, I think it comes down to that. They were just ready to go.
It was, and that's why I keep getting back to the 07 Patriots. So they played their best game at the perfect time. The 07 Patriots played their worst game at the exact wrong time.
Right.
And that's, I don't know whether you give some coaching credit to that or luck or whatever.
I think
but,
you give some coaching credit. Yeah.
You know, Pete Carroll had them just unleashing. Like, they were that bull that was ready.
They were jacked and pumped and ready to go.
They opened that
man,
door and boom. Yep.
It's cliche, but
and
that's
that
what
that rah-rah style, I think, really played to their hand. You know, that Pete Carroll college kind of a mentality, I think, really had those guys ready to get off.
Yeah.
You know, first off, guys, I can't understand how any Pats fan could term this game as disappointing. You know, for me, this was absolute football porn for any Pats fan that was still blue after that loss. I mean, just watching blunder after blunder. You know, as I was watching this game unfold, I couldn't help but to imagine what Belichick was thinking about and watching this defense. And, you know, if that's going to influence us in free agency, I mean, to me, again, we've got to improve this D-line, and that starts with getting Jared Allen. You know, Christian talked about toughness. I made that point at running back the year prior. And a guy like Blunt, you know, turned that around somewhat. But I think we need a guy, and Jared Allen just seems like that attitude guy that I want to see in there, just going to get after that quarterback. But, you know, lastly, the Seahawks have one man to thank for all this, and that's Tavon Wilson. And the reason being is that after that win against us in 2012, that was the day that this Seattle team found their identity. The You Mad Bro game with Richard Sherman, that defined the Seattle attitude. And that's really when this team started to believe in themselves to go out there and win a championship. So, you know, you talk about defining moments with the team gelling and finding their identity. You know, in hindsight and being somebody that was at that football game, there's absolutely no question to me that they could have to thank the New England Patriots for playing up that game, beating them in the fashion that they did, and walking away with a team mentality, understanding that whether you have Russell Wilson at quarterback or anybody else, you can compete with the best.
Well, you're up in that neck of the woods, Chester, I mean, do you remember what was said after that game, like in the media and among the team? Did they look at it as one of those defining moments at the time?
Those fans always had an insecurity complex about, you know, whether or not their team had what it took to play against teams like, you know, the Patriots, like San Francisco and a lot of their rivals over the years. After that football game, there was just a different mentality, and granted, there was a lot of people that were just really high on the way that that game ended. But, you know, let's face it, a lot of my buddies here are Seahawks fans, and they just had a change in terms of what they believed in that football team after that Patriots game. And it just became more and more evident as that this season had rolled on. And you just can see that there's just a different mindset with that team. But, you know, I got to say, aside from Pats Nation, you got to feel good for a team that won their first championship. It's really been pretty cool to see everybody experiencing that. It really reminded me of the first time my Pats got a ring. And after years and years of losing, it really is a magical feeling. So, you know, you got to feel good about the fact that a team that never saw a championship had gotten one. Pretty awesome. But anyways, you guys, take it easy. I just wanted to sound off on a few takes there. I'll be in touch.
Okay. All right, Chester, thanks for the call. That's how good the Patriots system is. They actually make champions of other teams.
believe me, that quote was not lost on them. We're even taking credit for other people's championships.
Frank is in Winnipeg. Hey, Frank.
Hi.
Hi.
Love your work. It's quite a show today. Quite a range from all the way from heroin to the Super Bowl.
That's what we do.
My point is this. I think there is a. I have a question. Does Bill Belichick have the patience to deal with enough of the players who I might categorize as, you know, more physical, tougher guys that you get cheap late in the draft or in free agency, and you can develop. But once you develop them, they're really formidable. I mean, does he have the patience to do that? Because it requires a lot of patience and a different style of coaching. You know, a lot of positive reinforcement. I don't know whether he's that. I don't know whether he has that personality.
He doesn't.
I'd like you to comment on that, and And just keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks, Frank. We'll answer
thanks,
your
Frank.
Call.
He once said,
you
I'm
think,
not.
No.
He once said, I'm not big on positive reinforcement.
Yeah, is that right?
I remember him saying that.
He said it to Andy.
Yes. And I laughed because I thought it was kind of
Andy
funny.
Was looking for an attaboy and he didn't get it. No, I do.
I mean, I thought it was a telling that, statement.
But I do think he has patience.
Oh, I think.
I think that he's developed
oh, we've
plenty.
Seen
we've
that.
Seen him. I mean, Stephen Neal.
Not with us. But
no.
Not with his players.
You know, Stephen Neal being, you know, Exhibit A. I mean, I
or
think.
Or every other offensive lineman that's ever.
But I think there's a lot of guys that have sort of been on the roster for a year or two, sort of, you know, trying to find their, even guys stashed on IR for a year maybe as youngsters, and then all of a sudden, you know, in year two or three, they're kind of special teamers, and then they blossom into maybe a part-time defensive player. So I think he has patience, but Andy's right about the positive reinforcement. You know, he's not the kind of guy that's going to tell you it's okay, it's going to get better.
What was the context in which he said that?
Beating him down because they were, you know, sort of the mistakes that were happening on defense.
Yeah, I don't remember the specific.
It was a while ago. It's another one of those quotes that Andy and I like to point back to and just we use it for
oh,
everything.
Yeah, this was, I mean, this had to have been 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
But it's so it stood out to me so much for somebody to say that. And I don't necessarily mean it as a shot at him.
No.
He's obviously a great coach. He obviously gets the job
but
done.
But you're looking
in his own
for
way.
Insight into his style when he's with the players.
And, I mean, how many times has he said, this is a tough place to play. I'm a tough
guy. I'm a tough
guy
to play for.
Right. Well, you know who's easy to play for? The soft coach who's always telling you how good you are.
Well, I have a.
It's hard to play when somebody's not telling you you're good all the time, and you kind of have to just plug. You know, I'm reading the Marcus Luttrell book right now, Lone Survivor.
Extreme on
either side. There's no positive reinforcement in the Navy SEALs.
Right.
They kick your ass. They kick your ass again. They kick your ass again. Mm. And I think Belichick is more in that line
of development.
He's
more of a military.
Do you think one of the guys ever goes up to one of the, you know, the commanding officers and says, like, you know. You know, if you ask me a little bit nicer to go over that wall, I might be able to do it.
Right. Well, like, I just read one scene where the main guy comes and he asks somebody, how many are here? Like, their attendants or whatever. And the guy says, like, 138 plus two in the medic tent or something. Wrong. Everybody down 20. The two in the medic tent quit. They already left the base. How am I supposed to know that? I'm here. But that didn't matter. Yeah. He didn't know it, and they all had to do sets of 20 push-ups and as punishment for not knowing the exact number of people, because in the battlefield, you need to know where everybody is at all times and blah, blah. And, like, I envision this place being like that. It's high stress, high expectations.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
And you love it. I mean, these guys, they love their training in the Navy SEALs, and they look back with almost awe
on
these people.
Me. Yeah.
But it's not based on slaps on the ass and you feel good moment.
No, there's no like birthday parties and stuff like that.
Let me have a spin on that that the caller brought up with Belichick and those kinds of players. Do you think Bill would embrace a guy like Sherman, or do you think he would?
I think he would embrace him.
You think he would stifle him?
I think he'd embrace him.
You think he'd let him be Sherman?
I'm not sure. Like the post game interview type stuff.
Well, look
but
what
I think,
he did with Ocho Cinco
or Tlaib.
But I he stifled him.
Yeah, but I think the on-field...
I think Ocho Cinco would have been fine if he had played.
Right.
I think Aqib Tlaib is allowed to do what he wants.
I think the stuff with Sherman, he'd be okay as long as it didn't result in penalties.
Right. Yeah, I think he'd be fine with it. I don't think he'd have a
but
problem.
But I don't see Aqib Tlaib doing, like, all these outrageous things.
I think that Bill would have gone absolutely ballistic.
If, got into a fight with Steve
if
Smith
Sherman did what he did after the NFC Championship.
That was one game.
Well, even Carroll
he doesn't
said
do that every game.
Afterwards.
Oh, well, Sherman said it.
Yeah. No,
I mean, Sherman was
like
embarrassed
it.
By himself.
No,
but
no.
That,
I,
yeah.
I understand that. I don't think that Bill would want him doing that stuff.
Oh, I don't think anybody wants a player doing that.
Even Pete talked to him about it.
No, I know.
I think that was a super extreme.
But he does absolutely let Sherman be Sherman. I don't think Bill would.
Oh, yeah. I do.
I don't think you would let him be Sherman.
Like what you've heard so far? You'll love it even more when you read it in Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or log on to pfwonline.com.
All right. For those of you who had the patience to stick with us, we lost power all of a sudden. Everything just went pitch black throughout the whole stadium.
I think Philip Seymour Hoffman not happy with this.
So, you know, so obviously we had to reboot the servers, this being a streaming internet show. But Kevin, my big fear is that we may have lost the recording. Is that the case?
We lost it on the live one, but I'm going to try to see if we have it on the archive.
Okay, so
on the archive,
hopefully
a little
we'll have the show.
Did you PDF it? Did you FTP it?
All right, so
the FTP that, it after you record it.
That also cleared out our
cash,
the phones too.
Yeah, the phones,
the phone banks.
Let's go to
now. Do we think that was construction related? There's a lot going on here absolutely. At the stadium.
Yeah. I can confirm upstairs it was the same.
You think somebody said oops?
Yeah, that the whole stadium, so it must have been something to do with construction.
And it was strange because it went completely dark, and the only light in the room was coming from Fred's laptop.
Yeah.
So his face was like, it was like the spotlight was on Fred.
Floating head.
Because Fred's battery kicked in for his laptop.
Right. I thought we were supposed to have the battery. Don't we have
a backup?
Uninterrupted power source down here?
We have one for the board.
Oh, but not for the server?
Well, you'd need one that would be big enough to run. It'd need to be pretty big.
Okay.
A company.
So what good is it having for the board then, if it doesn't do
I
anything?
Knew this was coming.
No,
board doesn't get fried?
No, it's a legitimate question.
You know?
No, it's so
and as usual, you don't have a legitimate answer.
No, because this one, I mean, it was like,
you're
I didn't
a legitimate
when Jason
moron.
And
what's
Jason,
that?
When Jason and whoever installed the board, it was like $10,000, so they were like, oh, we need this.
It's Jason's fault.
No, but it,
the guy's making eggs in Denver now. It's Jason's fault.
He's making eggs.
Actually, he's working for some.
Yeah, he doesn't do that anymore.
He doesn't do it. It's some cloud storage company.
He don't shine eggs no
some
more.
What?
No,
so cloud what, maybe storage heard. Company.
So what you would use for, like, say you were doing a Providence College basketball
know?
Game.
I saw him when I was
and you, and the power went out. You have this big, like, you have a big square power strip that holds a charge that would keep you going yeah. for, like, an hour, right?
Well, I used to have that at my house.
Yeah.
Stop work.
So those are common. But in order to run all these racks, I think you would need something substantially
then
larger.
Why do we have anything if, you right. know, that's my question.
I don't know.
And why doesn't
why
the,
do we have anything?
We don't have power that kicks in automatically?
Oh, in the stadium they do. They
so
have,
why didn't it?
Well, it doesn't, it's
it goes
essential
like
stuff
a minute.
Anyway, so certain lights and,
oh, so not
you
us.
Know,
we're never essential.
It'd be great if we had one
it's
like
only out for
if we
10 seconds.
Yeah, but it'd be great if we had one for the room. So the room,
right?
Just
that's
didn't
what I was thinking. Right.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, I just assume there's a lot of expensive
we'll have to
equipment
work on
in there.
That. As we get bigger, you know, we
the
can't afford to be off
me.
Air. We can't afford to be off air. All right, let's get to the emails. webradio@patriots.com. I'll go with Ransford, who has
Ransford.
An email. Before we played the Broncos, many of us knew Manning's percentage of choking was very high, even high enough that it could increase our chances of winning. But after he beat us, we quickly forgot that the choke factor is still there. Well, Sunday happened, and the Seahawks reminded us of that. I was very stunned. He almost went home without any score to show to his mama. So,
I like that last line.
Yeah, I mean, certainly people are using this as another example of him choking in big games. So
I just think he played a terrible, terrible football. Whatever you want to classify it as, he couldn't have played a worse game to me.
Cody in West Virginia, great show as usual. I was wondering who you all think should be our number one focus this offseason. Do you think it should be to re-sign Tlaib or Edelman, or maybe go after a big free agent name or trade for a player? And whom do you think that should be? Personally, I'd like us to get Tlaib and Edelman back before anything, and then go after someone in the draft like Kelvin Benjamin or Allen Robinson for our offense, or Rashid Hegman for our defense. Thanks, guys, and take care this offseason.
Who would the biggest target be in free agency?
That's what I'm
non-Patriot.
That's what I'm trying to.
I mean, I know they brought up Jared Allen. Johnson's a guy.
Michael Johnson
coming off kind of an.
I would take. See, but I think.
I think he'd be
a
good.
Oh,
one.
He's a
oh,
perfect
yeah.
Patriot coming off a down year.
Buy low.
Buy
like
low.
Mm-hmm. I actually, in all seriousness, I like Michael Johnson.
Yeah.
I think he can play.
I would like that.
Yep.
That
you
would
don't
fill
like
a
Michael
need.
Johnson. He also had some concussion issues.
I think
year.
He's eh. I don't consider
him. But I would take Jared Allen, too.
I would take Jared Allen. You know what I was intrigued by? Jared Allen, I could see going head-to-head with Logan Mankins and just like, to me, they're very similar guys, kind of redneck-y, probably like to drink beer a lot. Just, and I could see them in training camp just going at it. And I think that might be good.
The yeah. things that you like, they probably like to drink beer a lot.
Well, Jared Allen has a drinking problem.
That's
Logan, I just assumed.
Well, let's
now,
bring in some guys
still,
that do heroin.
Speaking of that, does he still drink?
Who?
Jared Allen?
Maybe he just drinks to get drunk.
With the I problems that he had earlier in his
oh,
career?
I would assume. In moderation.
I don't know. Some people can't do it in moderation.
I think he still drinks.
How about Brian Arakpo?
I would take Brian
Arakpo. I would take Brian Arakpo.
I'd take Brian Arakpo, too.
I wanted him the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get him the second time. It's a very Patriot way. There's no perfect one. Like, we've had years where Julius Peppers, it's the answer.
Right.
Go get him.
Vic Carucci was on our station saying we were going to have
a done
this
deal.
Year,
yeah.
It doesn't feel like there's a perfect answer.
That kind of player, that Arakpo type, is always, that's my blind
spot. What about
Bird? I love those athletic, really athletic edge rushers.
He's going to be expensive. If he's a difference maker, he's a difference maker.
Yeah, I'm not sure he is.
I'm not sure he is.
I want a physical guy.
I don't really want to pay him $50 million or $40 million.
Like, not that I want Dante Whitner, but I'd rather have that style of a safety than Bird. I think Bird's a good player. I think
it's
he's a very good
now?
Player.
He didn't change it?
Nah, he scrapped that.
Oh, he pussed out?
Ed writes in, what do you think contributed most to Denver's Super Bowl loss? A, Manning's classic poor plan in the big game. B, the Wes Welker Super Bowl jinx. The second team with the season's number one scoring offense that has lost a Super Bowl with Wes Welker on their roster.
I just think they
didn't
show
up. Out of those two things, I would say A, Manning.
Yeah, sure.
I was thinking about that, like, you know, with the, what is it, 6 degrees of Kevin
separation
Bacon or whatever. Yeah. And, like, the 98 Vikings, the 2007 Patriots, you have the Moss thing and the Welker thing, and then the Welker and the 11 the 11 was the other high scoring one, right? Mm. And then the 2000, this year's like all these teams that have come up short, they're all like tied together with the Patriots.
Could we
Welker
get it back to
Moss.
83? Because wasn't Washington?
Oh, I'm sure we could. Yeah, Washington in 83. Mike Tice. I don't
know. Mike Tice.
Well, Belichick was coaching the.
Mike Tice, he just comes out of thin air. He goes, Mike Tice.
I was trying to think of an offensive lineman, because when I think Redskins, I think offensive lineman. And then I was trying to think of an offensive lineman who was a coach, and wasn't Tice an offensive lineman?
See? No, well, no, he was a tight end.
He looks like an offensive lineman.
Did he play for Washington?
I think
he
did.
No, that
he
wasn't necessarily relevant.
I didn't even know he played in the NFL.
Mike Tice?
Yeah.
He was a tight end for a long time.
Yeah, he was a long time player.
Yeah.
That's where he learned how to sell tickets.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
He was played for a long time.
Did he ride the bench?
No, he played.
Kobe Fleener and is named after Joe Jacoby, who was an offensive lineman on those teams. And
Kobe Fleener is named after Joe Jacoby?
Plays for the Colts, who obviously the Colts were the longtime team. Peyton Manning.
Who have no relevance here whatsoever.
You'd have to be an a-hole.
Alan in Boston says, the following sorts of stories are probably inevitable after a one-sided game like we just saw. But here goes, not second-hand, but third- or fourth-hand gossip. I have a good friend in Seattle area of unquestionable character who professes to have a source in the Seattle sports media who claims that the Seahawks are using PEDs on an institutional level, that is, equipment staff, hands out, uniforms, pads, cleats, and drugs. I know Seattle has had their share of issues on an individual level this year, but in your experience, could it be possible for drug use to be sanctioned on an organizational level, that is, with the full knowledge of coaching staff and ownership? I say no.
I say yes. Not like that, but I say it could be.
That's what he's saying.
No, I'm not saying that they're handing out uniforms and drugs. I'm saying that they know it. They know that the players are doing it.
Well, I think every team does. We know that there's players on the Patriots that probably do it.
Maybe I didn't explain myself. They're doing it intentionally. They're sort of
promoting it.
Yes.
It's part of the program.
They're telling you to do it.
All it takes is one guy to blow the whistle and they're screwed. I think they look the other way.
Yeah.
That's not what this guy's talking
about. No, he's not.
Which
that's
is why
I don't
think
agree
it happened.
With this.
I think that could be happening in Seattle. Too many guys.
You got to have a real closed community where you know no one's going to ever do that.
I mean, if we're all under the assumption that everybody's doing it. Mm. Right? We're all under the assumption that everybody's
dirty.
But they
do it on their own.
So why do they have three times as many people getting caught?
Because
they be that unlucky?
Do they really, though?
Well, yeah, I think they did. They had 11 guys, right?
11 guys have been accused or found guilty.
Yeah.
Like Richard Sherman got off on a technicality.
In the last 3 years.
I thought it was two, but maybe it was, maybe you might be
that's
right.
More. Because I think we've kind of had.
We've had our share.
We've had like four.
Brandon Bolden, Rodney
Harrison.
Not
11. Yeah. Well, Rodney Harrison was 2007.
I know,
but Brandon Bolden, Jermaine
Cunningham. Bolden, Cunningham, and Spikes.
And Spikes.
Yeah.
Tlaib we inherited.
But those three right there, I mean, don't a couple of those guys have multiples? Or it's 11 different players out of 53?
Oh, I don't know if it's 11 different players. It might be.
Well, I think
Brandon Browner might count.
I'm telling you.
Brandon Browner might count more than once.
Every team's doing it.
That's a good point.
So no team should say, well, I'm glad we're not.
Oh, No. Yeah. No. I'm with Andy. They're all cheating.
Yeah.
I just think
they should be.
I think Pete
Carroll. They do a job that requires them to do what they do.
I think Pete Carroll has absolutely no moral compass.
But to do it at the level that this emailer is saying.
That was proven at USC.
I just think that. Again, all it takes is one person, equipment manager, pissed off ex-coach, I don't think they would do that.
Right. Yeah, I don't either. Because I think it's too easy to do it other ways.
Yeah.
Your agent and your other players, it's one of those things. You don't know exactly how it comes to be. It's not a program, but you fall in line and just do what everybody else is doing.
It's usually one guy who's at a high level who does it and puts it, hey, you should be
doing
this.
But I'm not sure
they
all do it the same. I think sometimes agents are the common factors. Ex-teammates. You know, you know,
you guys are probably
Stephen
right.
Cooper in San Diego and, you know, these
guys.
You guys
are probably right.
It just disperses and you don't really.
Too easy to have someone.
It's like a pyramid scheme. It just kind of trickles down.
All you would need is someone to get cut that doesn't think you should have gotten cut.
Right.
To blow the whistle.
And you don't think an a-hole or two has come
I wouldn't do what they wanted me to do.
You guys are probably right.
A quick aside, did you read any of the 1,000 texts that came out between Martin and Incognito?
I hear it's not looking good for Martin.
No, there's a lot of fascinating stuff in there.
Yeah.
A lot of fascinating stuff back and forth on all the various topics. And the line that stuck out to me was Jonathan Martin, after it all happened, you know, Incognito kept checking in with him. They had, like, all the texts, and he finally responded, and they had a conversation. And Martin goes, don't ever check yourself into a mental hospital. And Incognito says, oh, I've already done that before. Like, you have two starters on one offensive line that have both checked themselves into medical hospitals before. Like, it's just a different world, I think, that I don't really...
Dan writes in, perhaps this is a non-issue, but I was wondering what you guys think the outcome of this game could mean for the league going forward. While a lot of us around here loved how Seattle performed on defense and that the refs allowed them to play that way, for an outside observer, it must have been incredibly disappointing and boring. Since this happened to the highest scoring offense in history, led by the NFL's sweetheart, whose legacy is apparently immune to being affected by losing championship games, is there any chance the league overreacts to this and comes down even harder on defenses than they already do?
Who is this?
You think the referees let Seattle play the other day?
Yeah, I don't think.
I think they were really tight with the calls.
Yeah.
That's not the part of the email that bothered me. His legacy is immune to the criticism.
Yeah, I think he's getting absolutely destroyed.
He was being sarcastic.
No, he's being serious.
Think
he thinks that no one's giving Manning any crap and they're killing
him. Failing. I think all ever people
destroyed.
Ever talk about is Manning choking. I think that is always the subtext.
Right.
Even people that love him have to acknowledge.
They had a great compilation of stuff on ESPN today, like all the different shows and the different, you know, and how man, you know, like it started with Mike Greenberg, and they, you know, he was saying, "Listen, I don't care how great he is, this has to hurt." And then they would go to the next guy. Teddy Bruschi was one of the ones. He was trying to do something that no one ever done and win Super Bowls to different teams, and he failed. Then they go to the next one, and there was like 8, 10, 12 different guys. Chris Carter and, you know, the guys on the NFL Live show, Trey Wingo with Tim Hasselbeck, and those guys absolutely killing them. Now, rightly so. When you come up that small in the big spot, you deserve the criticism. But to say that he's being immune, his legacy is immune, Troy Aikman made an asinine comment at the end of the game. That is not indicative of what everybody else is saying. Aikman said that, I don't think this in any way, shape, or form diminishes anything he's accomplished. Yeah, no, he's still one of the best quarterbacks of all time. This game is always going to be part of that resume. I'm sorry.
Part of the legacy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You can't ignore that bad of a performance in the Super Bowl. The first Super Bowl, to me, didn't diminish his legacy, but this one did.
Sam in Chicago, one thing I was thinking during the Super Bowl is that Peyton doesn't do well when pressure comes at him up the middle. When you come at him from the sides, he has all day, something we all saw in the AFC Championship game. Had Wolfork and Kelly been around for the last game, the Patriots may have been able to knock him around. Instead, the Patriots relied on Ninko and Jones from the edge. We all know how that turned out. That being said, I don't think we would have fared any better than Denver in the big show.
7 and out.
So.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, Manning obviously doesn't do well with that kind of pressure constant.
I thought we didn't measure up to Denver just the way they didn't measure up to Seattle. I think it was two very clear 2-week spans. We weren't in Denver's class on that day on that field in Seattle, and Denver was not in Seattle's class on that day on that field.
But I also thought the pressure came from the edges the other day. I thought it was
I thought it was Averill. I thought the pressure early came from the secondary because they pressured him to hit guys that they were going to beat the bleeping snot.
I meant later in the game when the score got out of hand and the pressure.
Right.
I mean, the two tackles got killed, especially Averill on Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as much Clemens and the other guy, but Chris Clark. But I thought Orlando Franklin stunk. And these people that loved the game, you know, because defense won. I have no problem with hating, you know, all my friends. I had a house full of people, and every one of them was rooting for Seattle because they all wanted Manning to lose. And that makes total sense to me. You know, you're a Patriots fan, and you love Brady. You wanted Manning to lose. I get that. But would you have felt a 43-8 game that didn't involve Manning would have been that great? Because I don't think there's anything great about that game.
No, unless you were Seahawks.
To me, it was one team that played at a very high level, and the other team played at such a low level that the game was unwatchable.
No, it was
the most
it
was totally unwatchable.
I can remember.
Yeah.
just nothing. There's no entertainment factor.
Not at all. Aside
from the Schadenfreude that Andy wrote about with on his commentary.
How do you say that word?
Schadenfreude.
I can write it. I just can't say it.
And I'm sure you had to look it up. So, you know, make sure you get the squiggles.
Well, it,
I would have no idea.
I was one letter off, and Microsoft doesn't help you. Really? I don't know why, but when you type it in perfect,
yeah,
it's no squiggles. So right. It knows it's a word.
It's a foreign word.
Well, and you have to have the S. The big S. It's a capital.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
If you have a lowercase S,
it wouldn't recognize it.
But it doesn't give you the option to capitalize the S. It's like it's not in the dictionary or something. It's weird. Is it named after Freud?
No.
No.
Eric?
I don't think so.
Because I don't think Fred has any idea what he's talking about, so I'm going to go to you.
I definitely
at least I know you'll pretend you know what you're talking about.
I do love the fact that Eric was not willing to commit there, though. You could tell. There was a little reticence.
What is it, a German word?
I'm not a German word.
It is a German word.
Was Freud German?
He was Austrian, but they spoke German.
So it could be together.
It's not.
Oh, God, I hope it is. Just the way you're being an a-hole, I hope
you
it
hear
is.
Didn't you hear the sniff?
I did. By the way, we haven't talked much about getting a Super Bowl today. Everybody else is talking about that. How come we're not?
We talked about it. We said that we're not going to
get a Super Bowl in Foxborough?
Yeah, we talked about it at the beginning of the show.
We
talked about it for like 20 minutes.
You were the one that said, Ben Volen's the one that's tweeting about it.
Yeah. You went on an unbelievable
you went
on
a rant.
You started the show that way,
you
basically.
You called him
I think
all kinds
I blacked
of names.
Out with the power.
I don't even remember your rant.
You called
now.
Volen all kinds really? Of names.
Did I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You went on an Andy rant. Yeah.
Well, while we're on it, did you know that he thinks Edelman? I may have had
I think you're on heroin.
Did you know that he thinks that Edelman is the Patriots' free agent priority? I've been told this, that he's been tweeting a lot about it.
Okay.
That's ridiculous. It's okay.
The you mean overall, not just...
No, over Tlaib.
Over Tlaib.
That's asinine.
Well...
Idiotic. Moronic.
It's so much so that Andy and I were going to do a point-counterpoint, you know, the bigger priority free agent, Tlaib or Edelman.
Well,
neither
if you
one
already
us...
think that Tlaib's going to be a franchise player, then I could see that.
He's a free agent.
He's a free agent. So if you
and I don't believe
him,
he's
going to
be a franchise player anyway, but even if he is, he's still a free agent. Which one's the priority?
No, what I'm saying
who's the priority?
Which one would you franchise?
Right. What I'm saying is maybe Volen means that they know they're going to franchise Tlaib, so that makes Edelman their priority.
Well, he doesn't know that.
I don't know. Why is he saying that?
Because he seems to be the only one that thinks Edelman is more important than Tlaib.
Oh, this isn't based on a source. This is his own thinking?
Well, I don't know with him because, you know, he writes that Brady lost all confidence in Amendola.
I don't know
if that's a source.
I'm just going to assume it's not a source because I don't think he has any.
Okay.
No, that's just me.
Check.
We haven't had a good check in a while, but that was a big one.
It's not as good of a check as Andy did early in the show and then has no recollection of it.
I do not recall.
You called him like
I can't
a couple of names.
Did I really?
Yeah. Like a clown and...
Because I said I'm reading tweets and you go, when you talk about reading tweets, you're talking about reading Ben Volen.
Yes! Yes!
I vaguely remember that.
That's word for word what you did. But I feel and like... I think you had that look on your face.
No. But did we actually...
wagging your finger.
Talk about it for a while?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
And Fred said maybe if they built a new stadium, a $1.6 billion
and then
stadium.
Remember we
I
said,
can have the transcript read back.
Remember we said, Fred said in 2076 there'll be an anniversary, and I said it's going to be Super Bowl 111.
I know you lost power and maybe the show, but did you lose your mind?
I need a reboot.
Yeah, I guess.
Wow.
Jeez.
James writes in.
Usually I'm reading my phone when I do it, but you were actually the one that was on the rant.
Sorry, Ben. I didn't. I blacked out.
You just wanted to make fun of him.
James
again.
Wants to know, wondering since Manning lost in the Super Bowl and he's now 1-2 in the Super Bowl. Do you think
worst ever.
His legacy took a hit? And do you guys think he can no longer be in the mix for the great quarterbacks of all time? I can only put him at most number 5 on my list. Like to know where you guys put him on your list.
Well, where's Dan Marino? And I'm asking seriously, what kind of recognition does Dan Marino get?
I don't think people
not
look
top
at
five.
Him as top 5.
No, because he didn't win one. If he had won.
And he only
one of those,
one.
Yeah. But if he had won it, like Wilson in his second year in the league, I think people would have thought differently of him.
Ever.
No.
Wilson's not even the best of his class.
Marino went in his second year,
right?
So if he had won that game,
was it his second or his first?
Second.
Marino's second. Year.
Yeah. If he had won that,
84,
and then had the same career that he had after that, I think people would think differently about him because they would at least say, well, he won it, and
which
he won it in his second year.
They
and
would he say won it he sucks, like Paul says about Brady, because he won his early.
No, but they would say,
he won it in his second year,
which is very impressive.
If they had beaten San Francisco that day, you know, scoring the same amount of points that they scored, he'd be a greater quarterback. I hate that. Eric's right. He would be looked at differently.
Top 10?
Probably.
Oh, I think he's in the top 10 now. Marino?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm just wondering because that's a comparison.
But not top five, would you agree?
Ridiculous. How many MVPs does he have?
He might be
any?
Knocking on the door.
Well, he had to have won the MVP in 80. Yeah. That year. He won
it was
84. 48 touchdowns.
Right.
84.
Yeah, he might be knocking on the door.
He probably
five.
Won. He probably won at least.
I just think that's a comp. Ridiculous numbers. Great passer. Never won, you know, but now he's got three Super Bowls. He won one, lost two.
Yeah, I mean, I think Manning is better than Marino, but it's hard to tell.
So would Manning be better if he never lost a Super Bowl, if he only won one?
See, I personally think not. Like, I
Me
think
too.
More of Brady for
but
being...
But Felgers of the world think losing Super
right.
Bowls is bad.
And that's kind of the flaw in that
it's
whole
stupid.
Argument.
Yeah, I hate right. it. No, it's not a flaw. It's a stupid
well,
argument.
And you also, if you didn't go to the playoffs, you don't add a loss
right,
in the playoffs.
Right.
Like, Manning just broke the record for all-time postseason losses. Right. That's because he makes them every
exactly.
single year.
Exactly.
Right. It's like Cy Young with the most losses in baseball
like
history.
I feel like Mazzarotti. Exactly.
Thank you.
But do you make a lot of money to say it?
I don't... I watching both those guys. Marino was an unbelievable passer. There's no
right.
question about it.
So
and he was great. I think Manning was better, but totally different eras. It's really
right.
hard because this day and age, I'm sure that the Elways and the Marinos and the Aikmans of the world could have been knocking on the door 5,000 yards every year and thrown 40 plus touchdowns every year playing in the era that they do now, where you're throwing all
yeah.
these safe passes, completing 65% of your throws and
right.
The defense can't
touch
anybody.
You have to look at the quarterbacks in the era that they were in, and Marino was great in his era. You know,
and he threw for
the
Manning,
best.
And
he
Manning's great in his era. He's got five MVPs.
But he threw 48 touchdowns and threw for 5,000 yards in 1984.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
Well, that's
pretty,
what I like.
I'm pretty sure he could do that every year now.
Right.
I like that whole Babe Ruth thing where, like, you know, nine home runs,
more
nine home
runs,
50 home runs,
more home runs,
or something
home runs like. Than
like,
you know, all the other teams.
Redefining the way it's done.
Right. Jerry in New Hampshire, I've been waiting for the show since Sunday night. Can't wait to hear Fred gloating over Penis Head's debacle. Sure, before the game, Fred feigned not caring if Peyton won. Wouldn't change Brady's legacy. But admit it, Fred, the rape and pillage was more than you could have hoped for. Peyton is still one of the greatest, but no longer the greatest. Brady's the best. No more debate.
And Joe Montana goes, hello.
I think Brady's a little bit better, but I don't know how Brady losing to Manning helps
Brady's
legacy.
See, I totally agree you with know. That. If anything, I look at it as it almost hurts it. Because
you just lost to the guy that pooped his pants.
Denver looks so... But
you
Denver,
lost to the pants pooper!
But even let's take Manning out of the equation and let's go to what the Patriots couldn't move the ball against that defense and he scored 43 points.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think it makes it look worse.
Yeah.
You never want to come up small when you're seen as a penis.
Also, there is something that, you know... There used
I was waiting
to, be
a, to see if he, I thought he was setting one up. I just wanted to get out of the way
but,
right there.
But there used to be something about, you know, look, if a team beats us, you want them to win because at least we lost to the team that went all the way.
Right.
But it seems to be the opposite this year. People, they don't care that we lost to the Broncos. They just wanted the Broncos to lose to
because
prove
of
what?
Manning. Because
to
of Manning.
How, no,
how
because
really?
Of,
I think people don't
it's
like Manning.
Manning.
It is Manning.
Yeah.
But to me, it proves
Patriots
how inferior you were.
Well,
you got blown out by the team that
that's
got blown
saying.
Out.
Yeah.
Emmitt Smith's like, whoa, you really got blown out.
The gap between the Patriots and Denver was every bit as the gap between Denver and
yeah.
Seattle.
So, I mean, I'm not sure I want to like go with that argument this year.
People's hatred here of Manning is that much.
Yeah,
that
I agree with Eric. I think everybody wanted to see Manning.
Why do you hate him?
And I mean, even on our Samsonite Make Your Case poll on Friday, what was it, 60-something percent of fans said they were looking forward to seeing Manning lose the Super Bowl.
Right.
That was the thing they were looking forward to most.
That's Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude. Yeah.
All right. Well,
capital S.
That's going to be it for this edition of PFW Progress.
You don't
want to thank everyone.
You don't want to give
them
a little extra?
What's that?
No.
I have to go up and do some work. You guys, if you guys want to stay, go ahead. He's Fred. Such an a-hole.
I have to go do some work.
No, I do. I have
if you guys want to just screw around and stay.
I'm not saying
you
screwing around.
You guys
want to
BS all day? I talk some football.
I'm not saying you're screwing around. If you want to do another out, but you know. All right. Well, we're going to be back Thursday. Don't worry about it.
Maybe. The power's here.
Kevin, is the show going to be up or not? Do we know?
Not the first part.
Oh, man.
That was good.
I can't believe that.
I mean, I ripped a guy for dying.
All right, well, that's something we're going to have to fix down the road.
We have a meeting Thursday already set up.
You have a meeting on Thursday?
We have a meeting to set that up Thursday at 11.
Okay, great. All right, well, thanks for listening. We'll see you on Thursday at noon. You made it through, but nevertheless. We'll be right back.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.